The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He won't come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, punch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa. We are live at One Bills Drive. I'm John Murphy. This is Donald Jones. And happy to be back. I'm happy to be back, Donald. I missed you were here
you,
with
you had like
the last
a whole vacation going on.
A 4-day weekend. It worked out great. I had a wedding to attend in central New York on Friday. And a golf tournament yesterday, the 25th annual golf tournament to benefit Empower, the Matthew J. Murphy Memorial Golf Tournament, named after my dad. So happy to be honorary co-chair with that with my buddy Keith Radford. So, yeah, I missed you. I missed you, though.
The tournament is named after your dad.
Yes, sir.
How competitive do you get in that tournament?
Not fair.
Like, named after my dad. I got to win this.
No. I think we were 4 or 5 under par only because we had a former PGA professional in our group.
Oh, you guys are
a little
cheaters.
Ringer.
Buddy, you got a ringer Memphis, on the team.
But no, we didn't come close to winning. But
is
it was fun.
He's your annual ringer?
No, it was the first time we played with the guy. We'll do it again, too. Aaron Rotella. But no, it was great. It was great to be out. Great to see the people at Empower up in Niagara County. They do a great job with this golf tournament. The course is great. Niagara Frontier Country Club up in Youngstown. We caught good weather, just a couple of sprinkles and then a downpour when everything was done. A great day, and I was really happy to do that. A lot of feedback on the show, Donald. A lot of feedback. A lot of wise guys. How come you're not doing the show? Who's doing the show? Chris Brown sounds pretty good. You better be careful, you know. But that's okay.
Was guys in the tournament?
Yeah, all weekend long, but especially yesterday at the golf tournament. You know, watch the show every day. Listen to the show every day.
It's like that sometimes.
I don't know. This is going to be self-serving. I don't think our ratings accurately reflect the numbers of people watching and listening to the show. I really don't. It is self-serving to say that, but maybe I just run into people all the time who listen to the show every day and watch the show. And, you know, many of them watch the show.
Yeah, I run into people retirees. Just at work sometimes. Like, man, I just had the show on at work. I'm like, wow, really?
I had a friend of mine I was with at this wedding, lockboard guy, whose wife told me, I can't get Charlie away from the TV now in the middle of summer, noon to 3. I'm like, come on. I was like slapping him, Charlie, come on, it's summertime.
What are you doing? Yeah, right, get outside.
Again, totally self-serving, but I feel good about the people who are watching and listening. I think we're hitting the target audience in some way.
In some way.
Yeah. All right, so what went on when I was gone? Nothing, right? Players and coaches gone?
Nothing at all. Everybody's gone.
Very little news.
Half the people we work with, everybody's gone.
Yeah, I know. You know, I know.
Like the whole office, the whole building is dark.
Right. But we're here, and we're here. I'm here for the rest of the week. The show continues next week. We've got a hiatus week coming up after that. We're here to talk Bills football and the NFL with you. It is very quiet here today, but rookie development week continues. They got a couple of weeks of that, Donald, and a really good chance, I think, for the Bills to continue what they started with these rookies. And I would think they do some conditioning work and probably a little football work in the classroom, but I would think a lot of what they're doing now is sort of orientation to life in the NFL, how to handle different things in the NFL, right? That's what Marlon Kerner and his group are up to these days, right?
Yeah, Marlon Kerner and his group are pretty busy right now. I mean, these guys are working out during the day, but it's nothing like during the OTAs and during the mini camps. Right now, they just have a little workout, and then the rest of it is all about life in the NFL and how you deal with different things in the NFL. I actually speak to them tomorrow.
Do you really?
What's today, Wednesday?
Today is Tuesday.
Is it? Jesus. So I speak to them Thursday.
What are you going
to
talk about?
I don't know yet.
Come on. Why did they ask you to speak? What are you going to say?
Well, it's just about, me somewhat telling my story and letting guys know, listen, you think everything is all good right now. If you just got drafted, if you didn't get drafted, you have a great opportunity in front of you. If you come to camp and first of all, if you head into these 5 weeks and you work hard and then you come into camp in shape and ready to go, you have a great opportunity in front of you. But it's really about living life in a fishbowl. And people don't really understand when you're in the public eye, you do live life in a fishbowl. All eyes are on you and you can't make mistakes. You don't have room for mistakes. You guys are rookies. So that's just, and it talks, I'm going to talk a little bit about, I was the NFL. They always say it's not for long. Mm-hmm. The average career is what, 3 years and a couple of games, something like that, and I was 3 years, you know, and I was out of the NFL just like that, you know. And so I'll probably get into a range of different things.
Is the fishbowl existence different here in the NFL than it would be for, say, Tre'Davious White coming from a big school at LSU? I mean, how much more attention could there be here in one of the smallest NFL markets than you would get at LSU or at Alabama or some of the other
schools? I think the difference is, you know, at LSU – You're in a fishbowl, but you're like a goldfish in a fishbowl. And
well, this is going to be good. Yes.
Once you get to the league, you're more like
smallmouth bass.
Yeah, something like that in a fishbowl. You know, like,
no, I don't know what.
Because you have a little bit more money. You know, so now all eyes are on you. You have the opportunity to now get out and do different things because you have some money in your pockets. You know, so it's a little bit different once you get here. And at LSU.
I like that. That's a good analogy. Today on the show, speaking of Tre'Davious White, he's going to be joining us at 1:30. He is here, part of the rookie development program, the Bills' first-round draft pick, Tre'Davious White, who we had on the show, I believe, the day after he was drafted, and haven't talked to him since. So this goes back a couple of months since the last time we had Tre'Davious White in studio with us one-on-one. He's coming up at 1:30 today when the rookie development stuff winds up for the day. And Steve Tasker makes his regular weekly appearance with us at 12:30 today. Steve will stick around for an hour or so. We've got a lot of things to discuss, and we'd love to hear from you. Phone lines open at 803-0550, toll-free at 1-888-550-2550, or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Speaking of Twitter, our Twitter poll deals with the Buffalo Bills and the series that began a week ago for the Bills and the top 10 list. A week ago was top 10 moments, and we discussed that on the show. Yesterday, last night, the premiere of episode 2 of the Bills' top moments, it was the top 10 offensive players in franchise history. I know you and Chris Brown talked about that a lot yesterday. Top 10 offensive players in Bills' history. It aired last night on MSG. It will air again this afternoon at 4:30 when our show is complete on MSG. It will air again tonight at 11:30 p.m. Somebody tweeted in, we're going to get into the meat of this, but somebody tweeted in, where can I watch these online? And the answer is soon. They're not available online yet. I believe once the series is complete on MSG, the entire series, the Bills' top moments, the Bills' top 10 offensive, defensive players, top 10 draft diamonds, all of that will be available online at BuffaloBills.com, but not yet. For today, the Bills' top 10 offensive performers airs on MSG at 4:30 p.m. and again at 11:30 p.m.
It's good for, I mean, for those that can't see it on MSG, by the time this series is over, it'll be somewhere around where seasons, the training camp is about to start up by the time it hits the website. And it'll give you something to get you a little bit pumped up for football season, I guess, right?
But people are getting pumped up about this. I got a couple of texts last night from Bills fans, friends of mine, who disagreed with the top 10 offensive performers. And so I wonder if we can go through the list. If you haven't seen the show, it is again on at 4:30 today and 11:30 tonight. But the Bills' top 10 offensive performers, let's count it down from 10 to 1 for you here on the show. And then let's let you weigh in a little bit. The 10th offensive performer in Bills history, Kent Hall, great center. 9, Jack Kemp, the AFL quarterback who led the Bills to back-to-back AFL championships. Number 8, the great Cookie Gilchrist, who had a very short career, 42 games with the Bills, 3 seasons, but a meteoric career for the Bills. Eric Moulds was number 7, an extremely productive receiver in the, 90s, right? Late 90s into the this millennium.
Eric
Billy
Moulds?
Shaw,
Late 90s, until about 2005,
I
want to
say he was drafted, 96.
He was drafted in 96,
Billy Shaw, the Hall of Fame guard from the AFL era, was number 6. Joe DeLaMalier, the Hall of Fame guard from the 1970s, was number 5. Andre Reed was number 4, the Hall of Fame wide receiver from the Super Bowl teams. Number 3 was O.J. Simpson, the record-setting running back in the 70s. Number 2 was Thurman Thomas. And the number 1 offensive performer in Bills history was Jim Kelly. And that is the result of the TV show, the top 10 offensive performers in team history. We want to hear from you today on Twitter, or we prefer on the phone so we can dialogue. So the top 10 offensive players in team history revealed yesterday. Who is your number one? Who would be your number one offensive player in franchise history? And the Twitter poll is up. We can discuss it on the phone. Right now, 45% of you say the quarterback Jim Kelly. 26% of you say Thurman Thomas. 24% say O.J. Simpson. We couldn't fit all 10 names on there, obviously. 4% say somebody else. What do you think? The top 10, or who would be, obviously, the number one offensive performer in team history? Who do you think it is? 803-0550, toll free 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter. The number one offensive performer in franchise history, who do you think it is? I know who I think it is, Donald, and it may be an unpopular opinion. In fact, I'm sure in some quarters it will be. We have to confine it to on-field performance.
Right.
At the outset. I think I'm going to qualify. No, let me just say it first. O.J. Simpson. Mm-hmm. I think it's not a no-brainer, but I think he is a clear-cut number one as far as the offensive performer. O.J. was a transformational figure in the NFL during his playing career. O.J. Simpson was, you know, he was the man in the NFL for at least 4 or 5 years, the most dynamic player in the NFL. He was the Michael Jordan, the LeBron James of the NFL back in the 70s, starting in like 72, 73, and continuing on until he left Buffalo in 1978. O.J., to me, is a clear-cut top offensive. He was the most dynamic player in the NFL for several years. And I acknowledge what, you know, the Jim Kellys and Thurman Thomas did. They're in the Hall of Fame. The top six performers on the Bills' list of offensive performers are all in the Hall of Fame. But O.J. Simpson, I think, is a clear-cut number one. And now come the qualifications. O.J. Simpson is a despicable human being. In prison for a good reason, but not in prison for all the right reasons. He's in for, you know, a lesser offense. He's despicable. But as a player, as an offensive performer, if we can confine it to that, he is a clear-cut number one offensive performer to my mind.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you there. When we talked about this in the office, I think both of us looked at each other and were like, O.J. at the same time. You know, like you said, you have to respect what Jim did and still does in this community. You have to respect what Thurm did on the field and still does in this community. But O.J. Simpson was, like you said, he was unbelievable. He was able to do so many different things at his size, his strength, his power, his speed. He was able to run away. He was able to – we talked about it earlier in the office. He was able to run through you, away, shake you, do whatever he wanted to do back in that day in an era where everybody knew you were going to run the ball. And so, you know, you stacked the boxes. You did whatever you had to do to stop the run, and he still went for over 2,000 yards in 14 games.
14 games.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you really have to – I would think O.J. is – he should have been number one on this list. We know quarterbacks always get the love, and that's and you know, rightfully so. And Jim Kelly did a lot for this franchise. You know, he did a lot on the field. He was a great quarterback. But I just think O.J. Simpson, if you step aside or you try to think outside from everything that he's done since he's played, O.J. Simpson was unbelievable.
I think he'd be my choice, and I'm surprised that he wasn't number one on this list. The top 10 offensive performers in Buffalo Bills history, the list is out. The TV show is up. It airs on MSG again at 4:30 this afternoon. Made its first airing last night. Airs at 4:30 this afternoon and again at 11:30 tonight on MSG if you want to roll your DVR. The top 10 list has Jim Kelly, the number one offensive performer, Thurman Thomas, number two, O.J. Simpson, number three, Andre Reed, number four, Joe DeLaMalleur, number five. What do you think? Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I'd like to think that you could make the case for O.J. or not based on the merits of on-field performance. And, look, we all know the guy, as I said, is despicable and committed a heinous crime, at least one, as a matter of fact. But do you put that aside? I think when you talk about – we didn't say the top player in Bills history. We didn't say the all-time most – certainly not the most popular player in Bills history. We didn't say the best player in Bills history. The category is top 10 offensive performers. And, boy, I'm hard-pressed, even with all the great Hall of Fame production from Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, Billy Shaw, Joe DeLaMalleur. Really, to me, it'd be hard-pressed to argue that anyone was a better offensive performer than O.J. Simpson during his Bills career. But make the case. Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. These lists are hard. You know, we know Jim Kelly. We love Jim Kelly. We know Thurman. We get him in here. We love Thurman. Andre. And when you list them, when you rank them like this, you know, the tendency is to think you're denigrating one or the other. No,
right.
We're talking about a 55-year, 57-year span of Bills history here. And certainly comparing across eras is difficult. But over those 57 years, I don't think there's any shortage of finding top 10 offensive performers. There are others, though, I think would merit some consideration. You know, I think Bobby Chandler had great years with the Bills at wide receiver back in the 70s. Albert DeBenyon in the 60s, great years. I know you guys talked yesterday about potential top 10 offensive performers on the current roster. Who'd you come up with, Sammy and Shady?
Yeah, we came up with Shady would be the guy. I guess Eric E. Woods could be a guy that you can consider. I think it would really just be those two guys. Shady, for me, would be the number one guy. If you're talking about someone on this team right now or on the offensive side of the ball, it would have to be Shady. And we talked about this in the office earlier. Do you need to be on a team for a certain amount of time before you can be considered on one of these lists? Because Shady's only been here 2 years. I don't know how much longer he'll go.
Right.
But only 2 years of production, would you be able to put him on that list right now?
Well, I mean, Cookie Gilchrist only had 3 years, 42 games.
Yeah. So I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. A couple of tweets on this. Bob Timchak says, it all starts with quarterback. Jim Kelly changed our franchise forever. With all the things he's done for Buffalo since his playing days, he's a hero. No dispute about that. No dispute. I would dispute that he's the number one offensive performer, though.
Everything that they just talked about was like off-the-field stuff.
Not everything, but a lot of it.
A lot of what they just talked about was off-the-field stuff.
Drew Jacks tweets in, without number 12 at quarterback, no Super Bowls. Thurman was great on those teams, but as we've seen in the past 17 seasons, it's hard to win without a great quarterback. No question about that. Rogue John Dewey comes up with, I think, a tweet that sort of, captures what I'm thinking. Rogue John Dewey tweets in, if O.J. didn't have an abhorrent history off the field, he would be considered the Bills' top offensive player of all time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I think he would be. And I think he should be. And it's very difficult to put aside O.J.'s off-field. It really is difficult to do. And, you know, people have a visceral reaction to O.J.'s he not only did he, you know, allegedly kill people, he ruined lives. He ruined his own kind of star-studded image. Mm-hmm. He is a tarnish on the franchise to the point where, you know, people are, I think, afraid to acknowledge what a good player he was, what a good performer he was.
I'm telling you. I think, and that's not even just with this franchise. I think when you hear people talk about some of the best running backs of all times, people are hesitant to even put O.J. in that conversation of all time in the NFL. And I think he was one of the best running backs of all time in the NFL.
Sure, he was.
And people just do not bring his name up. And it's all because of his transgressions off the field, you know, after he was done playing. So it's tough. He kind of put us in a tough situation here. But I do think that he is the number one offensive performer in this franchise's history.
He did put the Bills franchise and us indirectly in a tough situation. And I put that on my list of reasons to be extremely angry mm-hmm. about O.J. Simpson. You know, it's a blot on the history of the franchise. But this, when you talk, if you can limit it, and it's difficult to just offensive performers, to me, O.J. is at the top of that list. Joe Gabowski tweets, and don't forget about Jerry Butler. Had he not suffered that leg fracture, he likely would have been Hall of Fame worthy. That's a very good point. Mike Camerato tweets in, I think I'd put Reuben Brown ahead of Joe D, probably just my age demographic.
Now, that's what you'll get, especially with our Twitter. And we talked about this yesterday. There are so many good offensive performers in this franchise's history. There were going to be some snubs, so to speak. And we talked about Reuben and if he would be on the list or not. And, you know, he's not on the list. I'm sure he probably has something to say about it. But he could be argued to be on this list. You know, Reuben, a lot of production, a lot of Pro Bowls, you know, and went to a Super Bowl with another team. You know, so I think there's something to be said there for Reuben Brown, but I guess when you have so many Hall of Famers, it's hard to get him on
Reuben
this list.
Reuben belongs on this top 10 list.
You think so?
He does. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does. And I'm looking at who I would bump, which is difficult. I mean, if you compare, I mean, Ken Hull is a beloved figure in the franchise history and a tremendous teammate. But does he belong on this list ahead of Reuben Brown, who went to like 9 Pro Bowls? I don't know. And Ken Hull was a key figure on the Super Bowl teams. But does he belong ahead of him?
No.
Ahead of Reuben Brown? I don't know.
My boy Rube can't get any love.
Nope. Cookie Gilchrist, you know, even with the 42 games, that's all. I mean, you could argue there were others who had really good production, you know, and it's a difficult chore to come up with just 10 offensive players. But the list is out there. It was the topic of the Bills top 10 shows that are airing on MSG, each one on Monday night. I believe top defensive performers is next Monday night. They'll take a week hiatus and then go back to a couple of other shows, two more shows. And the top 10 offensive performers, again, will re-air today at 4:30 in the afternoon, 11:30 today on MSG. You'll be able to see it then. In the meantime, let's discuss, let's debate. We'll talk with Steve Tasker about it when he joins us at the bottom of the hour in about 10 minutes. Who's your top offensive performer in Buffalo Bills history? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or by Twitter and some tweets on this, Jean-Pierre Jobin. It's in 2017, it's Jim Kelly, because now the NFL is a quarterback league. The vote would be different if it was in the 90s when the NFL was more a running league. I'm not so sure about that. I think you know, Bills fans are able to distinguish. And we're comparing across eras. I think we all accept that and the difficulties inherent in that. I mean, when Jack Kemp just does belong on this list, you know who belongs consideration on top 10 offensive performers? Joe Ferguson, quarterback in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Took his team to playoffs, developed into a really good passer, and held several franchise passing records up until Kelly. You could argue that Joe Ferguson was a better passer than Jack Kemp, and yet Jack Kemp is number 9 on that list. Now, Jack Kemp has the two AFL championship rings, obviously, but Ferguson had much longer career than Jack Kemp in Buffalo, and I think he was a more prolific passer.
I don't know. I think it's just so hard to do a list like this when you have a historic franchise that has had so many guys. Obviously, if you have 6 or 7 Hall of Famers, all of them are probably going to be on the list, right, of top 10. Mm-hmm. But then you have so many other guys that have had very good careers that you could argue, man, you're talking about performers. Even someone in this generation would say Stevie Johnson, a guy who went 3 years back-to-back-to-back over 1,000 yards as a receiver, would just make that argument for him to be on this list. Now, it's tough when you talk about, you know, Emolds and Andre Reed and those guys, and you have so many linemen and running backs to get to a top 10 list, but you're talking about a generational argument, you know, and you have people in this generation that didn't see the guys back then. You have the guys from your generation even before that are like, you're crazy. It has to be this guy,
right?
You know, that haven't really looked at this generation at all. So it's just so hard to put together a list like this. And I'm sure the people on Twitter are going to vote generationally as well.
Yeah. Garrett, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he tweets, an OJ. He was the guy. Everybody knew it. Still couldn't be stopped. The other 9 players on the list had more team help than OJ. Yeah, yeah. David Sim tweets in, I think Kelly's success reflects the total team effort. I don't look at him at number 1. I look at him as a result of a team of number 1s. Yeah, Kelly had talent around him. Mm-hmm. In fact, on this list of top 10 performers, he had 3 if you count Molds, 4 if you count Hull. Yeah, 4 teammates. So 4 of the Bills' top 10 offensive performers came in the Super Bowl era, or at least 3, maybe. Right.
And then you're going to have, when they do the defensive performers, how many guys are going to be on that list that he was on a team with,
yeah,
you know, that helped them get to those Super Bowls?
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, you definitely can't Jim should be top 3, I would say, top 5.
Yeah, top 3,
but
sure.
I think OJ is number 1. OJ was just able to do what he was able to do in 14 games back then where you weren't throwing the ball like you do now. You know, when everybody knew he was going to run it. And not just that, just the way he was able to do it. Like, you have in today's game, you have running backs that are either big and strong and they run through you. You have guys like a Shady who can elude you, who can shake you out of your shoes. But OJ was at his size, his strength, he was able to do everything, like a total, complete running back, you know. And so I think he should be number 1.
I was just rearranging, and somebody tweeted in, Charlie Nadelny, who picked the list? Well, the producers of the show picked the list. You guys had Mike Adamek on last Friday. And
yeah.
Simon Tuckey produced this particular episode.
Did they do it? Or
no,
they did it themselves?
They did it themselves. They talked to people. They did, like, what did we say, 35 interviews.
They did.
You know, and that's all part of the show, too. So they talked to a lot of people, but they came up with a list. And, look, it's not the definitive list, and that's why we debate it now, and that's why you should watch the show and think for yourself. It is not the, you know, this is it, case closed, no argument list. In fact, I would submit that the list – encourages argument. Mm-hmm. If I had to rearrange the Bills' top 10 offensive performers, at least up top, I would make OJ number 1, Kelly number 2, Thurman number 3. I'm good with Andre at 4. And then, well, you know, I might put, you know, Billy Shaw ahead of Joe D a little bit. And I might think about taking Cookie Gilchrist off the list because of only 3 years. I might think about taking Kent Hull. I think Reuben Brown belongs on the top 10 list. But, you know, if I were rearranging it, I would look at Joe Ferguson. I mean, I'd probably take Gilchrist and Hull off the top 10, put Reuben and Ferguson in the top 10 somewhere in the bottom five. Mm-hmm. And I'd probably make the top three OJ, Kelly, Thomas.
I think I'd have to agree with you there.
Yeah.
It's so hard for me, though, because I didn't get to see most of those guys on that list play. You know, I haven't even seen highlights. And the one thing is, for linemen, it's truly hard to vote for linemen because they don't get any shine like that.
Right.
You know,
right.
you don't pay attention to linemen. Even when they go to a Pro Bowl, sometimes you're like, wait, he had a good season? I didn't know he had a good season.
What?
How'd yeah, right. So it's just hard when you're talking about linemen. I know Reuben, though, with 10 Pro Bowls, should be on the list.
He should be on the top 10 list. But it is up for debate. We will continue to debate, and we will bring in Steve Tasker as part of the debate in just a couple of minutes here when we return. Top 10 offensive performers in Buffalo Bills history. Who do you like as number one? That's the TV show that airs on MSG at 4:30 this afternoon and 11:30 again tonight, re-airing after it first aired last night. Give us a call at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Steve Tasker, number one on anyone's list of the top 10 special teams performers in Buffalo Bills history. He's coming up next in studio with us, so come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined now by Steve Tasker, Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS. And, Steve, good afternoon. Thanks for coming in. Is it
Thanks
raining
for having
now?
Me, guys. It not off and on.
You're like the bit. Weather. When Steve's here, I'm figuring it's raining. No golf to
I
be
had
played.
Projects to do today.
Projects.
Yeah.
So you got out of those, huh?
No, I didn't get out. I had to do it before I came over. I had to replace my mail. But somebody took my mailbox out.
What, with a car?
Yeah.
That's supposed to happen in the winter. With
boom! Thing was in like six pieces across my driveway late last week. Yeah, I'm not really a guy that goes out and gets you like right away. Going to run down to the hardware store, grab all that stuff. So you know, it took me a few days to get my mind around the project. So I finally did it this week.
Was it a drunk driver?
I don't know. The guy didn't even come say hi. Didn't say sorry. Hey, my bad. Not a note. Hey, let me pay for it or let me replace it. Nothing. I don't even know who it was.
Someone in our room just turned 21. Had a long weekend.
Right. Yeah. No, not probably one of those. Probably one of the interns, right? They did that.
One of the interns.
Did you check their car?
Yeah, you gotta check the car.
My mailbox left some damage. I am almost sure.
Steve Tasker joins us in studio. We're talking about history. This is right up your alley, Steve. Talking about the show. It aired last night. The top 10 offensive performers in Bills history. We want to hear from the folks calling in who their top offensive performer in history is. On the list is Jim Kelly at number one. Thurman at number two, O.J. at number three, Andre Reed fourth, Joe DeLaMalier is fifth, Billy Shaw six, Eric Mould seven, Cookie Gilchrist eight, Jack Kemp nine, Kent Hull 10. Steve, who do you think is the top offensive performer in Buffalo Bills history?
I'm okay with the top three. I mean, you get down and you know drop down lower than that, and then you start you know weighing guys and stuff. But I don't think there's any question. He played the most important position, and he was the driving force behind that team that went to the Super Bowl four straight times. But Thurman is truly a great player. I mean, Jim was talented and all, and he was a great leader. He had a lot of intangibles that went along with his talent. Big arm, and he had all of that stuff. Thurman was truly great. I mean, he was great. I mean, he wasn't just a great runner. He was a great running back, great football player. Mm-hmm. He could run the ball, catch the ball, run routes, pick up blitzes. He was good split out wide in the offense. He was good in the backfield. You could move him around. He could do anything, virtually anything with a football. He was a Swiss Army knife. And he was tough as nails, too. And I remember, you know, once back in the day, you know, you watch replays of our games, took a beating. Much like OJ, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just took a beating. He carrying the ball, catching the ball all those times, and never – I mean, it was still, you know, Bud and Abe and those guys, the training staff, for those of you who don't know, you know, they're the ones who you know, had to say, listen, you're not going today. You're going to sit that. You're going to sit down on this Wednesday practice, or you're going to sit down on this Thursday practice. Or he was in. You know, he didn't take days off. And I'm not saying that Jim did or any of those other guys. I'm just saying that he, after the pounding he took, you know, he led by example and showed up on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
I know OJ is not your, you know, a former teammate of yours. It's not really your era. He's got this ridiculous, sordid off-field history. But where is OJ on your list, and how do you regard OJ Simpson as an offensive performer?
Oh, he's great. I mean, but he's different, too. Different era, no question. It's hard to – and when you get into this, you know, those guys back in the 60s, it's hard to compare what they were asked to do and what they were doing to guys now, what they're asked to do. But I think a guy like OJ was truly a great player, but this was an entire organization that was focused on making sure they had him right. He was the engine. That's all they had, and their offense ran around him. Everything worked around him. Now, you can make a case for, you know, say, well, heck, Jim had Thurman and Andre and had Hall of Famers around him and James Lofton. That's true. But you know, if you're going to talk about, they didn't go. That team didn't go anywhere, and I don't know how much better OJ made guys around him. I don't know how much better the team would have been had, you know, somebody else been playing and they've been forced to have the wide receivers catch passes instead of block downfield. You know, I don't know, but there's no question OJ was probably the biggest part of that team.
Yeah.
And probably a bigger part than Jim or Thurman were of the Buffalo Bills offense in their prime. But I don't know that I could give him a better player.
And Donald, you got to get in on this, but I just look at it. I guess I'm evaluating it from a talent standpoint. To me, OJ, top offensive performer, yes, and the most talented player probably in France. Well, Bruce is right there too, but one of the top two talented players, just a great combination of size, speed, vision, balance, everything you want in a back. He was a dynamic performer. He changed the game. He was the guy in the mid-70s in the NFL.
I don't think he changed the game. I think he took advantage of the situation where the game was what it was, and he took advantage of an organization that didn't have anything else.
And set a new benchmark for production by running backs.
Certainly did. And it was a benchmark that stood for a long, long time, all the way up until Eric Dickerson ran for 2,100. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right. He did that. I don't know how, and I don't have his numbers in front of me. But obviously he ran up a lot of numbers, mm-hmm. and he had the 1 2,000-yard season. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that kind of, to me, that's where it kind of ends. And I've seen other guys have great seasons, or even two or three great seasons. Guys like that don't stack up to guys like Jim and Thurman.
And I don't want to get you in on this, but what would you say Thurman's best year was, like 1,200, 1,400 yards rushing, somewhere in that, right?
Rushing.
Yeah, so O.J. had 1,500 – well, let's start. He had 1,200 yards in 72, 2,000 in 73, 1,100 in 74, 1,800 in 75, 1,500 in 76 in 14 game seasons. I mean
– yeah, it's truly great. Yeah. No question about it.
So that's 5 years of really solid, big number, boxcar number production.
Well, Thurman led the league in yards from scrimmage for 4 straight years, and it had never been done before he had done that by OJ or anybody else. Thurman did it, and he did it differently, no question about it. OJ was almost completely getting the ball handed to
him.
That's
what I was just about to say.
Thurman did it a variety of different ways. I think he was more versatile, and I don't know how you say he's less talented because he does more things.
I don't think you can say that. I think people would say, how much did Thurm benefit from having Jim and having Andre and all those guys on the team with him versus an OJ who was by himself in an era where everybody knew you were going to run?
Well, if you're going to compare them, but you can't compare the teams and then compare the individuals. The teams were better. Jim and Thurman were better because they had each other and a bunch of other guys that were really good. Now you've got, you know, who are these, you know, OJ had Joe DeLamalure in front of him, a young Joe DeLamalure. There were some guys around that he had, you know, Jim Braxton, you know, blocking for him. I mean, he had some guys.
Yeah,
Reggie McKenzie. They had some great players too, and they never got any further than they got. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Jim didn't have a Hall of Fame offensive lineman in front of him. He had offensive Hall of Famers around him in the backfield.
Right.
It was a different team. I think, no question, OJ was extremely talented, but so were those other guys, and I think they were more productive in their era.
Top offensive performer in Bills history. It's the topic of the Bills Top 10, the series that airs on MSG, re-airing of the show today at 4:30 p.m. and again at 11:30 tonight. But we want to hear from you, Steve Tasker joining Donald and me. Who is your top offensive performer in Buffalo Bills history? 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Bob in Buffalo has a thought on this. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, hi, guys. Being old as I am, I lived through all these eras, the Kemp era, Cookie, and then Simpson. And I agree very much with what Steve had to say about Kelly and Thurman, but I also witnessed just about every game that OJ played. And if you watch, the HBO had that unfortunate whole series, OJ in America, on last week. And in the first episode, they covered his years at USC and then his two bad years, at first 2 years when Johnny Roush, who was probably the worst coach ever in Buffalo, used him as a decoy until Saban come in. They showed 15, 20, 25 runs of O.J. Simpson's, and I forgot how not good he was, how great he was. He was incredible that a man – with that kind of speed, and he was a good-sized guy, over 200 pounds, and I watched those films. I taped it, and I kept going back. I can't believe how good he was. I mean, he'd rip off these 60, 70, 80-yard runs every week, and you said, how do you do that? And I do. It's tough to say who is the best. So I suppose those top three could be in any order possible. I mean, we wouldn't be wrong having Kelly, Thurman, or O.J. Simpson as number one in any particular order.
Yeah, it is hard to say who's number one. And it is a good debate fodder, which is why we make it, you know, our debate today on the show, and why these lists work and why this show works, I think, is it is difficult to say. And it's difficult, Donald, to say it and to avoid, you know, talking poorly about Kelly or Thurman or any of the 10 on that list. But, yeah, again, OJ to me was the one who was the most dynamic anyway.
You definitely don't want to discredit or mean any disrespect to those guys, because they are great players of all time through in the NFL and in this franchise. And I would think, you know, those three guys are the top three. I would think that OJ is number one, just with that combination of everything that he brought in an era where that's all he did was run the football. I understand he had like a great line in front of him and all that stuff, but he was just so good, man. And I've only been able to watch highlights of him, but just watching highlights of him is like, man, yeah.
He was a superstar.
Yeah.
He was a superstar, and before social media and before the media is what it is, and before we have the internet and before all of that stuff, he was a superstar, no question. And when you talk about these guys, about which one's better and which one's not, I mean, my tendency is to compare OJ with Jim Kelly, or I mean OJ with Thurman Thomas, and leave Jim Kelly out of that conversation. Mm. So you pick your numbers, and you can, if, depending on how you slice the statistics, you can make a case for either one of those guys. No question. They're both superstars, and they deserve to be on the list, and you can shuffle them up any way you want to. I'll always put my guy first, but
right.
You know, because I know him and love him, but you know,
that's
the way the debate goes. And that's
right.
Why sports is great. I mean, you can defend it, and you know, it's not even something to get angry about. It's like, I don't like that guy. I disagree. I think the other guy's better. But it doesn't mean, you know, all of a sudden the guy's bad, because he's not.
Right.
No, I'm not getting angry.
I mean, they're all superstars. They're all great players.
Yeah.
They all did something in the NFL that nobody else had done, at least at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard debate to come to a conclusion and decide upon. But Jim, I think, gets the nod because he was placed quarterback.
Yeah.
No question about it. On that team that got to four straight Super Bowls, and nobody's, you know, gotten close to that, going to four straight. You say what you want about the one loss record and then going 0-4 in the Super Bowl, but in AFC championship games, he was 3-0 against Marino, Montana, and Elway. So Jim had a pretty good career. He's the first ballot Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm.
Top 10 offensive performers in Bills history. Who do you like? Give us a call at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Steve Tasker back with Donald and me when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NEPA from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Steve Tasker in studio with us. The Bills Top 10 series is up, and it's going to this week's installment is the top 10 offensive performers in the NFL. We're talking to Steve and Donald about that. You're welcome to join the conversation at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's Jerry and Webster. Hello, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How you doing?
Great.
Hi, Don. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm calling for about 7 or 8 years in the early 2000s, there was only one player worthwhile watching on offense, and that was Freddie Jackson. The man carried the offense. And I hope someday he ends up on the Wall of Fame. I'm not sure if he belongs in the top 10, but by golly, he was Mr. Bill for quite a few years. And I think most Bill fans recognize that.
Yeah.
Just listen to what you have to say.
It's always nice that when the club gets a guy who was unexpected, he's a co-college graduate. Marv Levy was the GM when they picked him up. And he comes out and plays extremely well for the club and is, you know, he's the kind of guy everybody wishes they had on their team, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just a good dude and easy to cheer for, made great plays for the club, got tough yards, great yards, got most out of every carry he ever got, and was outstanding on the team, in his media obligations, in the community. You're right. He's a stellar human being, and the club was lucky to grab him when they did. And it's amazing. You think about everybody had a shot at him. Anybody could have signed him, and the Bills were lucky to get him.
I remember talking to Fred. His first, he was here before you, Donald.
He was here before me. Yeah.
He came from NFL Europe and came to a spring mini camp, and Marv was the GM. So whenever that was, mid 2000s. And I was doing an interview with him and saying, "Wow, you don't get any break here, right? From football to football." He's like, "I don't need a break. It's the NFL. I'm ready to go." And you knew he had to be exhausted, yeah. Right? I mean, he literally, I believe, flew that night to get to Buffalo from Europe to start playing. And he's not done, Donald. This came up overnight,
yeah.
Right?
He's definitely.
He's going to play in a spring league showcase game in California, July 15th at Napa Memorial Stadium, Spring League California against Spring League East. Similar to what they had going on in West Virginia earlier this spring, run by the same people. Booby Dixon's going to play in this game. Greg Hardy, the former defensive end, going to play in this game. And Fred
is
Jackson,
it just a game, or is it,
it looks like it's one game.
One game.
Yeah, it's
Donnie Henderson's going to coach.
Yeah, some guys.
It's hard to give it up.
They're pure players. They'll play for free. And they just want to be on a team. They want to be on the field playing. They want to compete. And they don't have any other outlet. And let's face it, football is a team sport. You can't do it by yourself. It's not tennis. It's not ping pong, golf. It's not any of that stuff. You gotta have a crew of guys. And it's hard to stage a football game without a ton of people involved in it. But once it gets in your blood and you want to play football, you got to make yourself good enough to get on a team.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Fred has said over and over that he – hopes that a team will call him.
He's 36, right?
He's 36, yeah. He said that over and over in interviews. I hope that I can play again. I hope a team will call me. I'm waiting on a team. He's still training and everything, you know. And so as surprising as it, you know, sounds, it really is not that surprising because this guy wants to play football. And he wants to show that he can still play. And so he'll go play in a game like this so that he can show, look, I still got something in the tank, at least for another season. Like, just give me a shot. And I'm going to go out here and prove it.
Is it at all realistic, either one of you, that he might be able to do something in the NFL at age 36?
Nothing's 36? Impossible. I would say no, because there are so many young players mm-hmm. who it's more likely for a team, instead of taking a known commodity like Fred Jackson, who may be on the decline, and he's 36, and no telling whatever he's got left, that they would rather sign a guy like a couple of years ago, Carlos Williams for the Bills, who had that kind of a flashy year, mm-hmm. his right. first year. a guy with big upside where they can grab him and all of a sudden two years or next year down the line, he's playing like a $5 million running back and you're only paying him $700,000. Freddie Jackson's never going to do that. And they'd rather sign a young player who has potential than an older player who has no downside. He may not have an enormous upside, but he's not going to have a downside.
I mean, we talk about Marshawn as being old, and Marshawn is like 31,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he might have just turned 31 or something like that, you know, and he's been in the league for some time. And the running back position is a position you take so much. Fred wasn't a guy who was that elusive. I mean, he was elusive enough, but he took a pounding back there. He got tough, tough yards for a long time, and he was one of the guys that was actually getting it done for this franchise. And so at 36 years old, it's hard for a team to bring him in and say, all right, even if it was just for 1 year, even if a guy goes down, they would probably look at a guy like yeah. you just talked about, Steve, over a Fred Jackson. At 36.
Yeah. All right, we're going to break. We're talking about Fred Jackson, obviously, but also top offensive performers in franchise history. Steve's going to stick around with us for a little bit longer. So come on back. We'll take your phone calls. If you're waiting on hold, we'll get to those when we return. And you're welcome to join us on the phone at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Who's the top offensive performer in Bills franchise history? Give us a call. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the veterans are gone, but rookies continue to report for short days this week and next. The rookie development camp, days including classroom instruction, orientation to the NFL, conditioning work. The entire team reports to training camp in Rochester 5 weeks from tomorrow. The deadline for NFL franchise-tagged players to agree to long-term contracts has been pushed back 2 days to July 17th. Once that deadline passes, teams cannot renegotiate long-term deals with players who have been tagged with the franchise tag. Former Dolphins defensive end Jason Taylor will look to Jimmy Johnson to present him this summer at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Canton, Ohio, on August 5th. Johnson was the coach who drafted Taylor in the third round in 1997 out of the University of Akron. Washington Redskins not in the clear just yet as far as their team name, even after the Supreme Court ruled yesterday that the government cannot block trademarks on the basis that they're offensive. The fight over the Washington nickname will continue, it is thought, in social and business realms, even if it does not go on in the courts. In the NHL, the expansion draft tomorrow, the brand-new Las Vegas Golden Knights have until 10 a.m. tomorrow to submit their expansion draft selections. After looking over the list of unprotected players, each of the other 30 NHL teams had the option to protect several players. The Knights must choose 30 of the unprotected, one from each team. The results will be unveiled during the NHL awards ceremony tomorrow night in Las Vegas. Cleveland Cavaliers have parted ways with general manager David Griffin. His contract was up at the end of the month, and after extensive talks, no agreement was reached. Griffin, the GM for 3 seasons, helped the Cavs to their first ever title last season. And the Buffalo Bisons road trip continues in Rochester, 7:05 tonight. TJ House on the mound for the Herd. The Bisons lost to Rochester at Frontier Field last night by a score of 7-0. Red Wings had 17 base hits in that win over the Bisons. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined for a couple of more minutes here with Steve Tasker, Bills special teamer, Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS, talking about a variety of things, including the top offensive performers in Buffalo Bills history. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Here's a call from Steve in East Aurora. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hey, John. Hey, guys.
Hi.
There's really been 4 eras of Buffalo football with great success, and there's one era that's not recognized, and that would be the Chuck Knox era of the early 80s. And I think putting on maybe Joe Cribbs, Frank Lewis, Jerry Butler, of course, his career was cut short, but I think I would add those three to replace maybe the linemen, which I think is sort of silly to have linemen on there in an offensive category where you really can't quantify other than the success they had and maybe the Wall of Fame.
Yeah,
but
that's an interesting concept, Steve. You guys, there are 3 offensive linemen on the list unveiled by the Bills last night. Kent Hull at number 10, Billy Shaw, Pro Football Hall of Famer at number 6. Joe DeLaMalera, Pro Football Hall of Famer, number 5. So somebody recognizes the work they do, but you'd think Donald or Steve, they don't belong in a top 10 offensive
performance? When you're talking about a top 10 offensive player list, then maybe you can have linemen. But when you talk about top 10 performers, performers are people want to see the guys that put the butts in the seats out there. that's the receivers, quarterbacks, and running backs.
It's tough, too. For me, in the eras that I played in the mid-'80s all the way through the late 90s, it was a left tackle, right tackle kind of league. And then the center, with our guy Kent Hull. Kent certainly belongs on every top 10 list, whether football's involved or not. He was that kind of guy. But for me, and we were talking during the break, these days, if you're playing guard, it's kind of where they hide you. Both tackles it's left tackle, right tackle, and then the center, or maybe left tackle, center, and then the right tackle. The guards are where, you put 4 and 5. So to put guards on the top 10 list, I question that wisdom. Even though those guys were maybe the best guards, some of the best guards ever to play the game.
Do you think the Hall of Fame in Canton puts guards in? They're not obligated to put a guy in from each position.
No, they're not. They're not. But when DeLaMalure played, when Billy Shaw played, the game was different. Those guys would stand up, turn right or turn left, and start and run around the end and look for a cornerback and try and block one of the best athletes on the field out at corner. So it was a different game then. In my era, though, in the mid '80s to the late '90s, it changed, and I think it's still there where it's a left tackle, right tackle league instead of a guard league.
Even when the guards like Richie and these guys are doing so much pulling and having to block out on the edges, blocking safeties and corners and things like that?
They don't do that as much as they backpedal into a pass pro.
True.
Teams throw it more now. Mostly, it's a throwing league now. Mm-hmm. When O.J. was playing, and back before that, it was a running league. And now it's not. And I think those positions reflect that. You get these massive tackles that are guys that are literally 6 feet, 8 inches tall and weighing, mm-hmm. Upwards of 330, 340, 350. And they can scoot, they can backpedal, move sideways, and push another 300-pound guy against his will. So, those are guys are at both ends of the offensive line. I think those are the kind of guys that are going to be even more so in the Hall of Fame in years to come than we've seen so many guards go in over the past decade.
Talking about the top 10 offensive performers in Bills history, and maybe who's at the top of your list. The Bills Top 10 series continues today with the TV show, 4:30 this afternoon on MSG, and again at 11:30 tonight on MSG, the Bills Top 10 offensive performers. But who do you have at the top of your list? 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Mark calling from New Jersey. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Donald, John, and Steve? It's always an honor to talk to Steve.
Thank
Hall
you.
Of Famer, should be Hall of Famer. It's Jim Kelly. It's by far and away Jim Kelly. And, Steve was just alluding to numbers and the way the game translates. The only thing I'll say about his OJ is he couldn't do what he did in today's NFL. The athletes at linebacker and the specialization and all the sub-packages, they wouldn't have it's not set up for that. Kelly, however, I look at his USFL numbers as a barometer of what he would do in today's game as opposed to what he did when he played in the NFL, because that was played by NFL players, pros. Mm. He was one of the only guys to ever throw for 5,000 yards. I think only 6 have done it. And Marino did it the same year he did. He actually threw for more yards than Marino, I think, or close to it, and 40 touchdowns. That's what Kelly would be doing in today's NFL as opposed to what he did then. It's easily Jim Kelly.
Anybody have any issues with what Mark said?
No,
I have a couple. But go
ahead.
Well,
yeah.
First of all, OJ versus today, and I remember OJ playing, but even now when you look back at some of the video, he's not outrunning slow defensive ends and linebackers. He's outrunning defensive backs. He's beating guys to the corner, getting into the secondary, and he's running against speedy guys and accelerating moving past them.
You can't play. You can't really say this guy would be good now and this guy would have been good then and that guy would have been good in any age or he wouldn't have been good now, because the fact of the matter is you don't know that. That's because if OJ would have been playing back then, defenses would have been different, no question about it. But you got to say this, he was ahead of his time. And that's why these guys stand out in the era in which they play. Either, you know, a guy like O.J., who was faster and bigger than everybody, made a difference because nobody else was doing what the NFL players are doing now. So yeah.
O.J. was like a 6'2", 6'1", 215-pound track star. I mean, that's difficult in any era to match up against, I think.
The argument that you could give Mark is, you know, they didn't have the training and technology that they have now. So if O.J. played in today's game and had the training and technology that they have now, he probably would be able to do what he did back then in this era. You know, it's just you don't know. It's so hard. You just don't know.
Yeah, if you're gonna say he couldn't have done that against these guys, we don't know if he would have grown up in this era.
Right.
How much he would have changed, maybe even been better.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? It's a huge question that I get all the time with the. No, if you take the 1972 Dolphins and you plunk them into this day and age, they would get lumped up every single. They'd go 0-17 instead of 17-0. But you know, back then they accumulated the guys and they went. They were perfect, yeah. and that's when you got to do it. And that's
the other point Mark made was how he looks to Kelly's USFL production as you know, how Kelly might fare in this era. I don't know about that. I mean, USFL didn't – there were some NFL players there, but they weren't all NFL players. There were some fringe guys.
Jim had some guys that went – his receiving core did go and play in the NFL. In fact, played against us a couple – in one of the Super Bowls for the Redskins. So, there were some guys on Jim's team that did come to the NFL. Maybe the Houston Gamblers had a few more of those guys at skill positions than other teams in the USFL were able to acquire. But – hey, Jim killed it in the NFL just like he did in the USFL. So, Jim was good by any measure.
Give us a call, 803-0550 or toll-free, 1-888-552-550. It's the topic of our Twitter poll. Who do you have as the top offensive performer in Buffalo Bills history on Twitter right now? 45% of respondents say Jim Kelly, 27% say Thurman Thomas, 23% say O.J. Simpson, 5% say somebody else. We're going to spend a few more minutes on this with Steve Tasker while he's in studio with us. Tony calling from Hinsdale. Tony, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I've been watching the Bills since the very first year. And I think Kelly is probably the best, but I just wanted to weigh in on the O.J. versus Thurman thing. And I would have to give O.J. the nod because what it always struck me was when I watched Thurman play, he would pop out and make a nice 35 or 40-yard run. But in the back of my head, I always said, you know, if that was O.J., they would have never caught him from behind.
Hmm.
And that to me, which is what takes Thurman down a little bit below O.J.'s lack of top-end speed.
Yeah, I would counter that. And I think I'd take that and respectfully say, yeah, I get that. No question, O.J. could outrun everybody in the league. And you saw it. You can see it in his highlights. I mean, the guy leaves guys alone. But my counter to that on behalf of Thurman was the team had so many effective ways to get him the football without just turning around and handing it to him. And that put a lot of pressure on the defense of finding him where he was lined up, following him in motion, guarding him with a cornerback or a safety. He could beat a corner one-on-one. He was just an impossible matchup. Anybody in the front seven who was relegated to covering him couldn't. They needed help. So, that's something that O.J. never proved he could do. We never see that on the highlights. Never see any of that from O.J.'s in his numbers. It's never reflected in any of his numbers or stats or anything like that. And yet Thurman, through all of that, led the NFL in yards from scrimmage four straight years. O.J. never did that. Even with a 2,000-yard running season, with a 1,500-yard running season, with a 1,300-yard running season, he never – got close to leading the league from scrimmage for four straight years, and Thurman did it four in a row. So while O.J. could outrun people more often than Thurman did, and he could maybe turn one play or two a play into a long game that Thurman didn't, Thurman made more 25-yard, 30-yard plays from Pat catching the football than O.J. ever did.
Call here from Chuck in Clarence. Go ahead, Chuck. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Enjoying it very much. it's almost sacrilegious, isn't it, this discussion?
A little bit.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, yeah, it is a little bit.
I mean, I was a season ticket holder 70s, 80s, 90s, and so forth. And I really have to go with O.J. And I think for the reason for me is that when he ripped off one of his runs, be it 15, 20, 80, didn't matter, I always said, I can't believe what I just saw. And I guess that's, for me, that's the factor on the other guys. I could believe what I saw. Those were great teams. Steve, your teams were the best. They were the best times. They really were. But O.J. was, he was, everything was on him. And yeah, he still did it, and you still couldn't believe what you saw. So as far as greatest offensive, the other thing is, too, for about 4 or 5 years, he was the greatest offensive player in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have a guy that can say that. So,
yeah, he might have been, the best player at any position in the NFL, yeah, during his heyday. No question about it. I think that's a great point. And I don't think there's any question. I mentioned it a little earlier, but I think O.J., obviously, above Jim, above Thurman, above any other player in franchise history, he was the biggest part of that team, than a bigger part of what made that team tick than anybody ever has been for the franchise. If you take O.J. off, if you take Jim off of those Bills teams, you know, Frank Reich, we won some games with Frank Reich.
Yeah.
If you take Thurman out of that team, well, you know, Kenneth Davis was a pretty good player, and, you know, that kind of thing. You take Andre away. He had James Lofton. He had Biebs and those guys. But if you take O.J. off that team back in the 70s, they don't win a game. Mm-hmm. They don't win a game. And in that 2,000-yard season, they went to the playoffs. I mean, that's a big part, a big percentage of your production. And I don't think there's anybody in the history of the franchise that was a bigger part of this franchise while they were playing than O.J. was. I think you can – safely say that's a pretty good bet right there. And I think that's why he should be at the top of the list and maybe considered to be number one.
A couple of tweets on this. Joe Bad tweets in, O.J. played when fewer teams made the playoffs. Defenses were better. Rules helped defense. Played 14 games and teams played 7 or 9 in the box against the Bills. Good point. M. Vote tweets in, what a shame that anyone associated with One Bills Drive would include O.J. or even act that he exists. Very sad.
Well,
it's real. He existed.
Actually does, yeah.
The good right about O.J. that we're talking about, we're extolling his virtues as a tremendous performer on the field. In my mind, the top offensive performer in franchise history. And the bad is real, too. And
it's
was
real.
Bad. It's despicable,
it's
as I said
bad.
At the top
it's
of the show.
Bad,
it's
right.
Awful.
It's awful.
It pains me that his off-field actions have left such a stain on the franchise. You can't ignore it. It's real. It happened. It all happened.
His off-field stuff makes, I think, for people voting, they will think about that, like this guy just tweeted in, before they think about how good he was on the field. You know, he's still up there on the Wall of Fame. Like, yeah, he exists. This stuff is real. It happened. Him on the field, him off the field, all that stuff happened. So, yeah, I mean, you can't just act like he didn't exist.
He did. You want to? I'm going to take a few more phone calls, and then we're going to move on, right?
Yeah.
You're sick of this discussion, aren't you, Steve?
No.
It's good.
Yeah.
Off-field fodder here. Or off-season fodder.
Hey, man, it's June, July in the NFL.
That's right.
We can talk about
look
this
at
stuff
us
now.
Let's go to Steve in West Seneca. Hello, Steve.
Hey, hello, gentlemen. I just wanted to give my opinion and weigh in. From the player that I watched, O.J., I was a little too young. But in my lifetime, I'd have to go with Thurman Thomas. Now, that being, O.J. rushed for 2,000 in a season, which was, you know, 14 games, which was incredible. Thurman, the yards are yards, all-purpose yards. Thurman averaged 2,000 yards three, four years straight, if I'm not mistaken. And he was an original at his position. Him and Roger Craig were the first two dual-threat running backs that I can remember that were productive as they were. And Thurman took it to the next level when he came around in 88. And, you know, Marshall Faulk was the next guy I could think of that could compare to Thurman. Those two are just in a league of their own. And like I said, yards are yards. If you're rushing for 2,000 yards or you're rushing and receiving, it's just one player is doing it. It's just as productive. So I'd have to go with Thurman.
Okay, Steve, I get that. I also think that what we're not asking for is a measurement of, you know, who had the most yards. That's easy to look up, easy to quantify. This mm-hmm. is a subjective discussion, you know, who was the top offensive performer.
Right.
It's not just about plunking down numbers on a table and saying,
yeah,
pick the highest numbers here.
Numbers, you know, I can pull up stats and really make an argument for anything. Now, when you talk about offensive performers, it's not just about the numbers. It's everything that that person could do and how they got to those numbers, in my opinion. And that's why I talk about OJ. I know Thurm was a guy who could do everything. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can run. He could shake you. And he was also a great pass blocker, which made him a complete running back. So that's why it's so good to debate this stuff. Yeah. I don't think you can just plop down numbers and say the numbers are this. This is why this guy should be number one.
Hey, let's change gears for a second as we talk about top offensive performers. I want to talk to you, Steve. Last Thursday, the Bills wrapped up their mandatory three-day mini camp, so the offseason is over. When they come back in 5 weeks from tomorrow, it'll be training camp. Teams are working through their OTAs, and most of them are finished with their mini camps now. Michael Bennett, the outstanding defensive end, the veteran for Seattle, was asked the other day why he just showed up for the mandatory mini camp and not the OTAs that preceded it. Here's what Michael Bennett had to say when he was asked that question at the Seahawks complex.
I like to be a parent. I got daughters. I'm a coach. I'm a teacher at the school. I do stuff in the community. I try to balance my football life with my actual reality. So to find that great balance as a human being, I feel like it's important to athletes to find that. I think a lot of times athletes have a problem when they retire because they build their identity around the sport. And so when the sport is gone, you are lost. So along this way, you got to transition yourself to be able to live in civilization. So find different things that you could be a part of. Find out who you are. I mean, so that's why I do what I do. I mean, I train harder than anybody in the NFL, so I'm not worried about being in shape or being the best player I could be. What I am worried about is how good of a parent I could be and how much better of a husband I could be. So those are things that I focus on when I'm off season.
Michael Bennett, Seattle, on why he skipped the OTAs and just showed up for the mandatory minicamp. Anybody got a problem with that? Can anybody argue with that?
It's hard to criticize it.
Yeah,
I really don't. I think it's great. And I've been a proponent. We've talked about it at times. I think the NFL, as far as the players go, I think it should go dark for 4 months. I think the moment your last game is played in January or February, whatever game it is, whether week by week, they should count 16 weeks out from that or 20 weeks out from that, and you can't talk to them or contact them. I mean, you just can't. They are on their own. You got to get it. Because for me, it was hugely important to – think about other things, mm-hmm. because for me, and I know you're probably like that, you pour your heart and soul into that, into every game, every week, and it's rough. So because of that, you need some time off. Mm-hmm. I think it would help the guys come back better. They'd come back refreshed. I think that should be in the CBA. You know, you should have a dark period after the season. If you go to the Super Bowl, you extend further into the off season with your 4 weeks, you know, or four months, and that should be it.
I feel compelled to offer the argument for fans, though. Come on, you play 16 games. Yeah. It's only 16 games. I got to punch a clock and go to work 52 weeks a year.
Yeah, you know why we only play 16 games?
Right.
Because if we played 20, then nobody left.
Come on, so you got to go to work.
In those 16 games, you've gotten in 100 car accidents. I mean, it just doesn't
compare.
That's the argument,
though, for people saying.
I know that's the argument.
They can make the argument, and believe me, I see the money, too. I know we're getting compensated for it, but listen, we're getting compensated for what we do, and if they could figure out a way to pack more games in, you know they would.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been
a proponent too. Just cut two preseason games out and add them to the regular season, and then make your every player is only eligible to play in 16 of the 18 games in the regular season. So Tom Brady, you know, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, they got to sit down two games for their team. So you got 18 regular season games that you're only allowed to play in 16 of them. So you get that product, and you can say, I think it'd add a level of interest. So
I don't want to buy tickets
for
those
people,
games. That's a different argument.
That is a different
ain't
argument.
About, listen, the NFL is not about selling tickets anymore.
I don't want to watch the –
It's about TV. Oh, yes, you would, because your fantasy team is riding on the fact they got a backup guy going against them. It's a whole new level.
It's just an artificial. This is something to talk about in the offseason. Maybe not today. I think what you're talking about is an artificial way to make
more,
18 games.
Yes, more product. And it keeps it just as safe as it is now.
Back to Michael Bennett.
I think people really sleep on the fact that when you come here for OTAs, typically, unless your family lives in that city, you're leaving your family for weeks in at a time. Now, you would only
understand
that.
Michael Bennett lives in Hawaii, by the way. Wow. Who wants to leave Hawaii?
Right.
You know, go to work.
Unless you've been to the military or something like that, you don't know what it's like to actually have to leave your family and go and practice every day and do all of that
stuff. There's a lot of business travelers out there, but still.
I mean, it's not an easy thing to do, you know, and you need to, because if you play football in the NFL, that means you've probably, most of these guys have been playing since they were young, 6, 7 years old, right? You've poured your entire life into playing football to get to this point. And the NFL only lasts for this long, and you're out of it. And then at that point, what else do you have to do? Most guys in this league don't make the millions of dollars. Well, and so you need to be able – you need to find another – you need to do something else outside of football so that you can transition into regular life outside of the NFL.
It needs to be said that Michael Bennett, and it's an admirable statement that he made, but he's in a different situation than
– he is.
I can look at the Bills
most
roster.
People can't do that.
89
most people
players
can't do
on
that.
The roster, there's probably 20 – at most, who could afford to have that stance that Michael Bennett has. Maybe
right.
not even that many
right.
on the Buffalo roster.
That's right.
He's in a different spot than
That's
most
correct.
Of his teammates.
But, hey, he put himself in that spot. I mean, he worked yeah. hard at it and, mm-hmm. and has made himself that way. And for most guys, they're not there. But I do admire the sentiment. I think it's where your mind needs to be. You got to have a balance. And it's like Donald just said, I don't care how good you are. It's going to be over. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady's going to retire. You know, Peyton Manning had to say goodbye. And you know what else? The game, everybody's going to say, you had a great career. It's awesome. But you know what? They're going to tee it up next week. You know?
Yeah.
They're going to tee it up next week, and you're done.
Right. You're done. And when you're done, nobody will really – I mean, most of these guys –
they ain't going to miss you.
They're not going to miss you.
You become part of the Twitter poll.
Right? A fate worse than death. I'm a Twitter poll answer. It's like being a Jeopardy answer or something. Hey, Steve, Donald asked me, and I don't have the answer about what it was like, you know, 20, 25 years ago when you were playing. As far as the off season, were they all voluntary show ups at camp, or were they?
There's both, and there was both. We had. It's interesting because back then, when I first got picked up by the Bills off the waiver wire. I played the second half of that year. We moved here, and I was here at the stadium every day in the off season working out.
Really?
Every
but
day.
You weren't compelled to. You didn't have to. Right?
No. You got to work out sometime, and we got to the point. It was at the point then where we were making enough money to live year-round. Mm-hmm. Because when I came in, there were guys who were making money that, you know, they were making 30, 35, 40, yeah. 45 in a four-year contract. So they were, you know, they'd get second jobs
sure.
early in their career. I was of the era where guys, that was it. Once you got in and made it a year through, you could live that year, so you could train in the off season. So training camp became less and less about getting in shape and more about developing the team and getting deeper into your offense and evolving as a team. And so that's what I did. I moved here, came in, and with the coaching staff in the building and the training staff in the building, we were there every day. And it
classroom
wasn't just me.
Time, going through plays?
No, none of that. We didn't do any of that.
Just
it was
working
all
out.
Working out. We'd compete. We'd play racquetball. We'd go out and throw on our own. And we'd lift and run. And we were on a program, a strict program. So, but you can't do that now.
Yeah, you can't do that now. You have – you can't, but, I mean, you – most of the guys, like you said, on this team are not in a position where they could just say, I'm not going to OTAs. It's just, you know. And even the guys that are that are in this position didn't do it this year because you have a new coaching staff,
yeah.
you know, and you have so much of that turnover in the NFL. Guys are like, I can't miss that much. I can't just
right.
totally
– disappear.
Yeah, disappear from OTAs. They find somebody else.
Some players would have that absence from OTAs used as a reason to let them go. I mean, you've seen that, right?
Sure.
Well, the guy didn't show up at OTAs. We wonder how
yeah.
committed he is.
I'm telling you.
I mean, they might
well,
not even verbalize that, but that's kind of what everybody
Yeah,
figures.
Or it might be that that's the excuse they use for something else.
For something
right.
else.
You know, something
right.
else. It's just one more excuse is uh-huh. all it is. Not, I think if they're going to – it should be either – it's got to be one or the other. Either you go dark and let these get rid of these guys for 4 months or bring them in and let them go. And the off season, let them come in 9 to 5 and you start developing them. And either let them train or whatever. And if you push them too hard and you got to start having guys drop like flies because of injuries, you're going out and play. That becomes a problem in your free agency bid.
Yeah.
People don't want to come in here and have to work
right.
9 to 5 in May. It's crazy.
There's one more aspect of this, which we, you know, feel right now because Bills players are gone. The veterans are gone at least for five and a half weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's the off-field incident factor. You know, I think there is an element from all of these teams, not just the Bills, all of these teams want to have some control and want to have some oversight over what their players are doing. And if you follow Steve's plan and you say goodbye in January and we'll see you in July, you know, that's less supervision on players, right? That could be an issue.
I think that that goes into really bringing the right guys on your team, mm-hmm. character guys, you know, and I think that's what Coach McDermott is trying to do. Now, obviously, things happen to anyone. It doesn't matter if you're a good character guy or not. I mean, sometimes you just get caught in the wrong situation. But for the most part, he's trying to bring in the right guys so he doesn't have to get that call in June, early July. It's, oh, so-and-so just was arrested or something right. like
it's
that.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Guys are grown men. They should be able to look after themselves. On the other hand, they're paying them seven figures. They got a responsibility to live up to the responsibility of that salary mm-hmm. and keep your nose clean and walk the straight and narrow and be disciplined enough not to end up as a mugshot.
Right.
So it's, it goes both ways. And that's just – and it's so – because here's the thing. The club, you're saying, well, they don't – you know, cut the guy. Well – that's fine. They cut. They got to hire another guy, right. And then the next guy's just like him.
Right, right. It might not be as good.
Yeah.
And it's so hard because these kids, from when they're young, are so entitled that once they get to this, it's like I've never been in trouble for anything, and now I get to the league and I'm making millions of dollars. There's no way I get in trouble for this, right? I can get out of that, and next thing you know,
trouble kind of finds you when you make.
You never, yeah. You never know what's going to happen to a guy when you hand him a check with six zeros and a number on it, you know.
Right, at 21,
at
22
21,
years old.
It changes you. And some guys can handle it. A lot of guys cannot.
Hey, I want to get back just two more calls on the issue of top offensive performer in Bills history. That's the topic of our Twitter poll. Joe has a thought on this from Williamsville. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. First of all, I was born in 1950, so I'm a lot older than you youngsters. One of the top running backs in Bills history, and he's not the best, but I would say he's probably top three, is Cookie Gilchrist. I started following the Bills in 1963 earnestly, and I've been a fan ever since. And I'll tell you, he was the type of running back. I remember a playoff game that he played against. It wasn't the New England Patriots at that time. It was the Boston Patriots. And he wouldn't run away from guys. He would run right into them. And people were afraid to play him. And he not only was a running back, but, I mean, he kicked field goals. He could play defense as a linebacker. I mean, the guy was a beast. And at that time, you had Jim Brown, and he was in his heyday with the Cleveland Browns. And people used to say, well, Cookie Gilchrist is the Jim Brown of the AFL. And he would get offended. He would think, he actually thought that he was just as good as Jim Brown. But going back now, or I should say going ahead to special teams, if I was to say who the best player for special teams is to me, Steve, you are the best. And I loved following you, and you left it all out on the field. Blocking kicks and, making returns, doing returns, punt returns. And at the end of your career, they even put you in at receiver. And you did a great job. And I scratched my head and I says, why the heck didn't they put him in earlier in his career?
Why not, Steve?
Well, you could sit down, Andre Reed or James Lofton, but they might not have gotten the Hall of Fame if they had been sitting on the bench. But I appreciate that. It's nice of you to say that. And I know Cookie Gilchrist was a great player. And there's still, when I first got here in 1986, there were still stories about Cookie and the things that he did throughout his career. And it doesn't surprise me that he would say that, yeah, I'm better than Jim Brown. He was one of those guys that had a lot of confidence. Paul McGuire told me stories about Cookie. He said he was a phenomenal guy, phenomenal athlete.
Eighth on the list of top offensive performers on the Bills list. Larry Felser, the late Larry Felser, used to tell the great story about a game in Boston when Cookie ran a sweep outside. The linebacker came in, or I'm sorry, a cornerback came and tried to hit him, and Cookie knocked him out, knocked him unconscious, which got a lot of people's attention. And then Cookie, on his way back to the huddle, walked right past the Patriots huddle and said, okay, which one of you guys is next? What a character. Unbelievable.
It's great stuff, man. Yeah. It's legendary stuff.
One more call. Wayne in Silver Creek. Hello, Wayne. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John. I'm a first-time caller.
Thanks for calling.
And I have to say, as far as Thurman Thomas goes, I would have to agree with Steve Tasker. He was more of a complete back than O.J. or even as your last caller said about Cookie Gilchrist running into guys. I've seen Thurman running into players. He didn't go around people. He would go through anybody who was in front of him. And he was an excellent receiver as well. And O.J., as I recall, when I was a kid watching him playing, he wasn't that good of a receiver. And they would rather him just hand the ball off than just throw it at him, because I've seen O.J. drop a lot of balls.
I think O.J. was okay. In fact, when he first got here, they used him a lot outside as a receiver, but he was okay as a receiver. Different era. This is the issue we get in this these lists, right?
I mean, because now, I mean, back then, running backs ran the ball. Now, running backs, you need to be able to catch the ball.
Yeah, and there were two receivers on the field. They didn't even have three wideouts.
They didn't even run three wideouts, and it was always a two-back backfield. And, you know, now offenses are so multiple. They got everybody moves everywhere. They'll put receivers in the backfield to move the back out. They put the quarterback out and run wildcat. I mean, that's all of that stuff. So it's a much more multiple set offensive world that we live in now in the NFL than it was back in O.J. Simpson's day. But, you know, you can't really say it's better or worse. It's just where the game has evolved.
Mm-hmm. Steve, it's always great to get your perspective on these issues about your former teammates. I know you're a bit of a student of Bill's history. You've been around here long enough, so you can appreciate everybody. So thank you.
It's my pleasure. It's a fun debate.
Yeah, it's been fun.
I'm glad I won.
Steve Tasker. Steve Tasker joining us for the last hour. Tre'Davious White coming up next. Buffalo's first-round draft pick this year. He'll be live in studio with us as we roll along the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. Again, our thanks to Steve Tasker for joining us. And we will resume the discussion about top offensive performers in Buffalo Bills franchise history, part of the TV show, the Bills Top 10. By the way, that show, Top 10 Offensive Performers, re-airs at 4:30 this afternoon on MSG and 11:30 tonight. Who knows, when they get 50 years from now to the top 10 defensive performers in Bills history, maybe our next guest is on that list. Tre'Davious White, Bills first-round draft pick from LSU. You could be on that list. Maybe not 50 years, 10, 20 years from now. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm setting goals for myself. So
is that out there?
I want to be great, man. So if I feel like, you know, if I perform well and do all the things necessary to get there, then, you know, that time will come.
You've been here a couple of months now since the draft. And been here a lot for the rookie camp and the rookie mini camp. Obviously, the mini camp last week, the mandatory mini camp. What have you done in the last 2 months to achieve that goal, to be great in the NFL? What's it been like for you?
First of all, just asking a ton of questions and taking every practice, every film session serious. I've done a great job of picking up the playbook. I know what the linebacker's doing. I know what my safety's doing behind me. So I'm pretty much comfortable in the scheme, so I feel like I can go out there and play fast.
When you first got here, I mean, we talked about the playbook and you wanted to pick up the playbook. How do you feel like you picked it up so far?
I'm 100% in it. I know what I'm doing and I'm comfortable in the techniques that, you know, Coach Bird is teaching me. So I feel like I got off to a great start, you know, with the OTAs and the rookie minicamp and the mandatory minicamp. So I have a lot of work to do, though, but I'm going to go back to Louisiana and continue to work and come back in camp in great shape and ready to roll.
You said you ask a lot of questions. Who do you go to with your questions?
Man, I'm fortunate enough to have some guys that's very battle-tested and, you know, pretty much been in every situation that I can be in as a rookie. So, you know, I've been asking Ronald Darby, Micah Hyde, a guy that's played nickel and, you know, safety. And, you know, I got Jordan Poirier out there. So, and then it never hurts to ask a guy like Kyle Williams, you know, that's from my alma mater and, you know, pretty much coming from Louisiana and, you know, pretty much know how it is to translate from Louisiana to, you know, Buffalo.
Do you ask Kyle about defensive back play? I mean, he doesn't know what's going on.
No, actually.
He might know.
No, I honestly, I just asked him about how you stay, you know, in the league so long, because I want to play this game as long as my body will. And, you know, I just asked him how he do it year in and year out at a high level. And he was just telling me, just taking it one day at a time. And, you know, he said, you know, he took it one day at a time and go out there and, you know, work hard every day. And when he looked up, it was 12 years later. So,
wow. All right. Throughout OTAs and minicamp, who has been the toughest receiver that you've had to face in practice?
That's tough, man, you know, because we got a lot of receivers that can do a lot of different things, you know, and we got guys that are very versatile, that can play inside and out, and some guys that, you know, run some deep and short routes. So that's a tough go, man. But, you know, Zay Jones is a guy that's, you know, caught my eye. You know, we both rookies, but, you know, he's been out there competing hard. And Philly Brown and definitely Andre Holmes. That guy's, you know, he can roll. You know, he's a long guy. So once he gets into his routes, man, he can leave you in a hurry.
Is he fast, or is he just because
he's a
so
long
tall?
Strider, man. Yeah. So, you know, if he's running a long route, you know, those legs, you know, the length of his legs is going to carry him away.
Tre'Davious White in studio with us for a couple of more minutes. Tre'Davious, the process of getting you in here, I mean, it's pretty apparent watching last week's minicamp that you are installed as in the starting lineup, at least now. Was that the case all along? Did they have you working, you know, as the third corner for a while? Are you working nickel, or what do they have you doing out there?
You know, I was just, you know, basically playing outside corner, but, you know, they had me learning a little bit of nickel too. But ultimately, they wanted me outside. But I felt like, you know, Coach Bird, you know, he told me, and all the coaches told me, you know, I'm going to have to earn it, you know, even though I've been running, you know, with the first group these last couple of weeks. But, you know, going to camp, you know, competition is going to heat up, and, you know, guys are going to be battling for the spot. So it's ultimately up to me to continue to, you know, be willing to learn and, you know, just compete well and compete at a high level. And I feel like I'm going to do that, and I feel like, you know, I'll be in a great position to, you know, help this team win.
It'll be a little different once the pads come on, but I'm sure you know, you'll be ready for that.
Yeah.
But once you get to training camp, first of all, before you even get to training camp, I know you guys are here. I think this is your last week here.
Yeah, we leave Thursday.
Do you have any plans for the off season before you even get to training camp?
Oh, absolutely, man. I'm gonna be training, you know, with Ryan Clark down there in Baton Rouge, and I'll be training at LSU also. So, you know, those two programs, I'm most 100% sure, you know, I'm gonna be definitely ready, once training camp comes. You know, those two programs, you know, coming from LSU, that off-season program is next to none. And then training with Ryan Clark, a guy's done it for 13 years at a high level with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So and I feel like I'm being pretty much in good hands, you know.
Now, I know as a receiver, we always do things on both sides when we're training, right? Now, as a cornerback, sometimes you guys feel comfortable on one side versus the other. Do you feel like you can play both sides corner? Or you feel more comfortable?
You know, what's funny about that is, you know, Coach Bird always asks me, you know, you're more comfortable on one side. I always tell him no, because, you know, at LSU, it was whoever, you know, hustled to the field first to get a side.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never you were never classified as a right corner or a left corner. You were just classified as a corner. And, you know, if you want to be lazy and not hustle on the field first, you know, you'll get that right side or you get that left side. So I was always taught to, you know, be able to do both at a high level, and we practiced that way at LSU.
What are these days like now? The mini camp over, you have this rookie development program going on. What do you guys do in the rookie development program?
Waking up still. Early in the morning, we have workouts for 2 hours, 8 to 10, and then we have, you know, we can eat for 30 minutes, and then you have rookie development from 10:30 to 11:30, and
that's
then
like
you,
classroom and then orientation,
yeah,
type stuff.
Yeah, and then you take a break for an hour, and then you come back for another hour, and you have another session of it. So that's what we just finished up now. So it's basically school for right now.
Is it football work or is it off field?
No, it's all off the field. Learning policies, learning about, you know, all the benefits you have as an NFL player, and then, you know, financial stuff like that. So, you know, they just want to school us, you know, because we pretty much don't know what we're getting ourselves into.
And guys pay attention, right? I mean,
absolutely. I'm taking notes on everything. I want to know.
Do you ask a lot of questions?
I really don't ask a lot of questions, but I listen to everything.
Yeah.
You know, but my teammates, they do a great job asking
and
questions.
I was in when you guys had one of the financial lectures when the guys from AXA came up. And was there anything in there that kind of surprised you about what they were saying?
No. I've heard it all, man.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just I've been fortunate enough to have some great guys in my corner just, you know, from growing up, you know, and coming to LSU. You know, we have a lot of guys that, you know, go to the NFL and play a lot of games and, you know, been playing in the league for a long time. So they can pretty much school us on anything that, you know, they've been through or things that are coming because they know how it's going to be.
Yeah. Tre'Davious White in studio with us, Bill's first-round draft pick back in a little bit more than 2 months ago, April 27th in the first round. Your life has changed dramatically since then, right? Drafted in the first round, and what, 3 days later, you had your first son, Tre'Davious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
I want to run you through how it went. So, you know, Thursday night, the 27th, drafted. The 28th, they fly me up here.
You did our show.
And, you know, and I flew back on the 28th. So
that was,
you know,
Friday.
Yeah, so I got home, landed in Baton Rouge around 11:45. So my girl picked me up from the airport, and we went home. So she was like, no, I don't feel right. So we went to the hospital. So we made it like around 12:45 to the hospital, and we stayed there till like 4 o'clock. It was 4 in the morning when we left. I know that. Mm-hmm. So we headed home, went to sleep. Picture this. I haven't been asleep because the night of the draft I hadn't been asleep. Yeah. So we headed home by 4.
So you went to the hospital and came home?
Yeah, and came home. So they released us. So went home. So around 8 o'clock. 8:15, something like that. She woke up. She's like, I think my water broke. We got to go. So picture this. I hadn't slept at all. So we went. We just dropped. We didn't brush our teeth and nothing. We just left. So we went to the hospital, made it there. You know, the hospital was like right around the corner. So we made it there.
You asked them for a mint when you got there?
Huh? No, man. I wasn't worried. I was worried about my baby. So we got there, and we stayed in the hospital for 5 days after that. So I had to, like, go home and
was
try
the baby
to shower.
Okay,
yeah, the baby was good, but she was just, you know, nervous, and her water really did break. So she started going into labor. She was there pushing. She was pushing for like 2 hours, and she couldn't. He wouldn't move, so she had to have the C-section.
Yeah.
So that's why it was a 5 day stay in the hospital. Did you say?
Yeah, they was. You know, you had to stay for that extra 2 days
once you had that.
So yeah, we was cooped up in the hospital for like 5 days after, and that was after the draft. I hadn't stayed in my own bed for a while.
Wow. And the baby's good?
Baby's good.
Right?
He's good, healthy.
Couple months old now?
He's a month and a half now, so on the 30th, he'll be 2 months.
Were the nurses and the doctors giving you extra love? Cause you just, did they even know that you
Some of them had an idea because it was Baton Rouge and, played at LSU. So they kind of knew, but, you know, they have this kind of code where they can't, you know, discuss anything that. So, you know, it was pretty cool, though. They was congratulating me because they pretty much knew.
Yeah. That'll be good going back home, being with your baby, right?
Absolutely. I haven't seen him in like a month. So the first couple weeks I was here, I go home every weekend.
Right.
So I go home like the first 3 weeks, I went home every weekend. Mm-hmm. So, and then I was like, man, I need to go get used to being here. So I'm going to be here. So I hadn't been home in like a month. So I'm looking forward to it.
You got a lot going on for a 22-year-old guy.
Yeah,
yeah, a lot, man. But I'm looking forward to it. It's what I asked for, and I'm extremely blessed to be in the position that I am. So I'm just taking it with stride.
Tre'Davious, thanks for coming in.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Okay, Tre'Davious White, Bills first round draft pick. Catching up with him almost a couple of months after he was the Bills first round draft pick. Donald and I back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Our thanks to Tre'Davious White for joining us a minute ago. Got a tweet from Cynic Clinic. I love Tre'Davious White. Great human being, no question. If he's half the player, he's an all-star. Something about Tre'Davious, and, you know, we had him on the show the day after he was drafted. Been around him a little bit over the last 6-7 weeks since he's drafted. Just now, he first of all, he's got a great personality. Good storyteller, and, I don't want to gush, but it seems like his heart is truly in the right place when he talks about the birth of his son and talks about getting to work here and how he's going to spend the next couple of weeks, you know.
For a guy who is so young, he seems like he gets it. You know, seems like he understands his position right now. He understands that he has a lot of work to do. He even said it, I got a lot of work ahead of me. But he's handled it well. He's handled everything on the field in terms of picking up the playbook, in terms of actually translating the playbook to the field and actually looking like he should have been a first round pick. He's had a couple of interceptions, a couple of pass breakups in OTAs off of Tyrod Taylor, you know, and I think that's a good thing for him. I think he's really he really looks like he belongs, and I think he's it's his job to lose in terms of that starting cornerback position.
Yeah.
I do think it's his
job. He was
job
reluctant
to
acknowledge that.
Yeah, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I was just about to get into.
He said, I got to earn it. And right. I felt like saying, haven't you already done that? But no, not in his mind, right?
And off the field, in terms of the media, he knows how to handle talking to the media, you know. And I don't know if that has a lot to do with playing at LSU. You deal with a lot of media when you play at a school like that. Whatever it is, he really seems to belong in this league. Now, we'll see how things work out for him once he gets to training camp and once the pads come on. But at this point, he does seem like he belongs in this league, and he gets it. He gets the off-the-field stuff and how big it is to be a dad. And, you know, I need to go back home now. I haven't seen my son in a month. I'm ready to go back home and see my son. I think he truly understands everything that has been given, and he's truly blessed.
Great to talk with Tre'Davious White. We thank him for joining us in studio. We had Steve Tasker in for an hour. Spent a lot of time with Steve talking about our Twitter poll, about our topic today, and it all kind of relates to the Bills Top 10, the series that is airing these days on MSG. Last night, the debut of the Bills Top 10 Offensive Performers, and we want to hear from you. This is our Twitter poll. The Bills revealed their Top 10 Offensive Players in team history yesterday. Who's your choice for number one? Who's at the top of your list? Top offensive player in franchise history. Right now, Jim Kelly gets 43% of your vote. Thurman Thomas, 27%. O.J. Simpson, 26%. 4% say somebody else. I detect a little tightening of the race there, Donald.
It seems like it. You think since we do these Twitter polls every day, we've gotten people to sign up, people who didn't have Twitter, to sign up for Twitter just so that they can be involved in these,
sure,
in these Twitter polls?
Sure, everybody wants to be in. Absolutely.
Let me be involved in this poll because
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You guys are voting for this guy. No.
Exactly.
You know?
And we can interact over the phone, and we'd love if you do that. We're going to take some more phone calls when we return. Who's your top 10 performer in Buffalo Bills history? The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Well, here in One Bills Drive, veterans are gone, but the Bills rookies continue to report in for short days for this week for a rookie development camp. The days include classroom instruction, orientation into the NFL, and conditioning work. The entire team reports to training camp in Rochester now, just 5 weeks from tomorrow. The NFL has pushed back the deadline for franchise-tagged players to agree to long-term contracts. It was July 15th. That's a Saturday, so they made it Monday, July 17th. Teams cannot negotiate long-term deals with franchise-tag players after July 17th. Among those who fall into that category around the league, Le'Veon Bell of the Steelers and Kirk Cousins of Washington. Former Dolphins defensive end Jason Taylor says he'll have Jimmy Johnson present him at his Hall of Fame induction in Canton, Ohio on August 5th. Jimmy Johnson was the coach who drafted Taylor in the third round out of the University of Akron in 1997. Taylor, a first-ballot Hall of Famer, finished with 139.5 franchise sacks. In the NHL, the expansion draft tomorrow, the brand-new Las Vegas Golden Knights have until 10 a.m. tomorrow to submit their expansion draft selections. After looking over the list of unprotected players, each of the other 30 NHL players had the option to protect several players. The Golden Knights' task is to choose 30 players from the unprotected list, one from each team. They have to wind up with a minimum of 14 forwards, 9 defensemen, 3 goalies. The results to be unveiled during the NHL awards ceremony tomorrow night in Las Vegas. In the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers have forced general manager David Griffin out. His contract was up at the end of the month. He had extensive talks with Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert, but no agreement on an extension was reached, so Griffin is out. David Griffin was the GM for the Cavs for their three most successful seasons these last 3 years, won their first ever title in the 2015-16 season, and had Eastern Conference championships around them. And the Bisons continue their series in Rochester tonight, 7:05 against the Red Wings. T.J. House on the mound for the Herd. That is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, John Murphy, Donald Jones, and you. You're welcome to join us. We've got phone lines wide open and a lot of time to do it. We've been talking about the top offensive performers in Buffalo Bills history. That is this week's this week's show on the Bills top 10 list. If you missed it last night, it aired last night at 9 o'clock on MSG. It'll be on tonight, today rather, at 4:30 this afternoon on MSG, and again at 11:30. Top 10 offensive performers in Buffalo Bills history. On the list, some great names, but maybe there's some names missing, and maybe the number one choice is not who you like. The names, number 10, Kent Hull. Number 9, top offensive player in Bills history. Number 9 is Jack Kemp. Number 8, Cookie Gilchrist. Number 7, Eric Moulds. Number 6, Billy Shaw. Joe DeLaMalur is 5th. Andre Reed is 4th. O.J. Simpson is 3rd. Thurman Thomas 2nd. And Jim Kelly is ranked as the top offensive player in Buffalo Bills history. What do you think? That's our Twitter poll, the Bills' offensive players, top offensive players in team history. On Twitter, about 42% of you say Jim Kelly is number one and should be number one. About 27% say Thurman Thomas. 27% say O.J. Simpson. That's a dead heat. 4% say somebody else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter. Who's your choice for top offensive player in franchise history? I went with O.J. for obviously on-field reasons. Off-field, he's despicable. He's ridiculous. But on-field, top offensive performer. I think he was the number one star in the game for a couple of years. Set a standard for running backs that took a while for anyone to match. Was far and away, I think, the most dynamic player in the game for at least a couple of years, three or four. And that's not to denigrate Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly. I think those are the top three for sure. But I've got O.J. as my choice for best offensive player, Donald.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I have O.J. I just think O.J., his combination of all of his tools, the size, the speed, the ability to run around you, the ability to run away from you, the ability to shake you, and the ability to run through you, you know, I have to go with him. I know people, and even Steve, talked about Thurm. Thurm is a great, great running back. Thurm had, you know, he did a lot for this franchise. He was a complete running back, a guy who really caught the ball out of the backfield. And it's so hard when we're comparing those two guys because O.J. really wasn't asked to do that. I mean, he just wasn't being asked in that era to catch the ball out of the backfield like the guys more in the 90s and then the guys now are being asked to do. So I just have to go with O.J. I think he was a great running back, and he was a superstar of all superstars. I mean, he was probably the best. I don't know. He might have been the best player in the NFL when he was playing in the NFL.
Yeah, for at least 3 or 4 years, I would think. But we're open for debate on this. That's what these lists are all about. That's what that show is all about, Bills Top 10, which airs on MSG. Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's something not up for debate at all. And it's a feature story, a video story that's up on our website at buffalobills.com. A day to treasure, and a remarkable day for a great Bills fan, Jay O'Leary and his family, who came here to One Bills Drive a month or so ago during the OTAs to celebrate life and their love for the Bills through a wish granted in conjunction with Treasured Time Incorporated. Here's the story. Jay O'Leary and his family here at One Bills Drive a couple of weeks ago, a day to treasure.
March 1st, I went to the hospital. I wasn't feeling good for probably, I don't know, maybe like 2-3 weeks. I never go to the hospital. I never go to the doctor. Last time I was at a doctor was in 06. I got in a logging accident, and I had no choice. I got crushed by a machine, so I had to go to the hospital, obviously. I wasn't thinking it was going to be anything major, but then as the day wore on, you know, oh, well, we're just going to do another test. Well, we'll just do another test. By like 6:30 at night, I think they had called her and said, you know, he's got cancer, so we got to move fast on this and try to do something. It's pretty big. It was like 5.5 hour operation. They took out part of my liver. They took out 12 of the 16 lymph nodes in my abdomen. They said they were going to take out the tumor, but because of where it was, they couldn't get all of it. It was a surprise because I didn't think it was anything major, and I wasn't feeling that bad to the extent that they said it was. It was a shock. They told me that, you know, you have 3 to 6 months with chemo and 3 to 6 months without. So that's an easy decision. You know, I can be sick every day from the chemo and won't be able to make memories with them, or, you know, not have it and see what happens. So it was 3 months on June 1st. We're pushing on. I wear this Bills hat every day, and I have, you know, the Bills sweatshirt, this Bills shirt, all the time. I wear the Bills gear because they're my team. Treasure Time, they're a group, they do trips to make memories with your family for a parent that's terminally ill. And a friend of my wife's, she nominated us, and we went through a process where they interview you, and, you know, they want to know what kind of trip you want to do, and they made it all happen. It was on short notice, too. It was less than a month's time. Just seeing the players out there, you know, a lot of leaders out there on the field.
Good to meet you as well, man. Welcome to the Bills.
Thanks. Sean, you can tell he's definitely all business, and he's here. He's here to win a championship. Like to see him out there, you know, getting everybody focused and buying into it.
We'll be praying for you guys, you and your entire family.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Just hang in there.
So after getting in the logging accident, which should have killed me, I wasn't like, you know, why me or this is unfair or whatever. It's more the people around me, how it hits them. You know, and I'm constantly telling people, stop mourning me. I'm not dead yet. You know, wait till I'm gone. You can do whatever you want. But right now, you know, don't depress me. We're going to make sure, too, that after I'm gone, we make sure that people know if they want to donate money to us, they give Treasure Time some. Because it's a good idea. It really is. You know, one of those things you say you're going to do and you never did, you get to do it. And after talking to Coach Sean today, I said we'll see you in January for the wild card home game. So
I promise you, if you stay strong, we'll stay strong.
That sounds good.
Home wild card game.
All right. I like it.
First weekend in January. That's a goal, too. We'll be on the 50-yard line for that. I don't care what the seats cost. You hear everybody say life is short. It's true. So take advantage of whatever time you can, you know, with your kids or whatever it is, you know, each day. You only live once, so you got to go out there and do it for you and do what you want to do. So that's how I've pretty much taken each day of my life. So enjoy the time you have because you don't know when your tomorrows are up.
A day to treasure. It's up on our website at BuffaloBills.com. Bills fan Jay O'Leary, he and his family, it's been a day here at One Bills Drive a couple of weeks ago during the OTAs. And, boy, who would not root for that? Just another great reason to root for a home wild card game. Jay O'Leary, who was given 3 to 6 months to live. If you want to check into that in depth, it is up on our website at BuffaloBills.com. A pretty amazing story. It's an amazing Bills fan, and it sounds like he was embraced by Sean McDermott and several Bills players during his visit here.
You know, that goes back to what we were talking about with Steve before he got out of here with the whole Michael Bennett thing and what he said, you know, because life is short and you want to spend time with the people who love you, your loved ones, the people who you love, your family, your closest friends. I mean, any time that you get to spend with them, you need to spend with them because you really just never know when it's your day. That's why for me, I respect what Michael Bennett was saying. Now, obviously he's in a different position than everybody else or a lot of other people even on his team. But, you know, for him to stand up and say that even was like, man, that's what's up. Like, I'm glad he said that because life is short. And when you hear a guy like this, Jay O'Leary, his story, and for him to be given, you know, 3 to 6 months to live with or without chemo. And he just like, you know what, then I just forget the chemo and see what happens then. I mean, I'm sure he is spending every single second of every minute of every hour with his family as much time as he can. And that's all he wants to see is the Bills make it back to the playoffs, you know, and hopefully they do.
Jay O'Leary and his family, it's a day to treasure. It is up on our website, BuffaloBills.com. We invite you to take a look at that at BuffaloBills.com. In the meantime, we continue our discussion on the top offensive players in franchise history. That's up on our Twitter site. You can weigh in there or give us a call at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Charlie calling from Buffalo. Go ahead, Charlie. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing? John, I need to make a remark about O.J. that I need to ask the question. I really wish people in that era that follow him would remember a game in 1975 against the Pittsburgh Steelers in Three River Stadium where he had that 96-yard run against the greatest defense in football. And he, like you say, he was the greatest offensive player at that time, in my opinion. And he had that 96-yard run against that team. And a question is, why isn't Joe Cribbs on that list? That's all I got to say. I think he deserves to be on the top 10 because when he played here, he was an exciting, talented running back when he started. That's all I got to say. You guys have a good afternoon.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Joe Cribbs merits some consideration. I want to say about 5 years with the Bills for Joe Cribbs. And obviously the first year was his best, but he had another year with the Bills in 1983, where he got considerable yardage. Yeah, I think of the top 10 list, Cribb's name is missing. I think you can make an argument for him. I think Joe Ferguson's name is prominently missing on that list. Albert DeBenyon, I think, is a name that would belong there. Even James Lofton, who didn't have a long career here, I think should get some consideration for top 10. John in Buffalo has some thoughts on this. John, go ahead.
Oh, he just took it.
John, are you there? What happened to John?
I don't know what happened to John.
I don't know what happened, John.
John's losing their minds these days.
Dan in Florida. Hello, Dan. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Guys, I can't agree with you more. I mean, is there any other running back, pure running yards, that did 2,000 yards in 14 games?
No.
I mean, really?
Nobody has. Nope.
And everybody knew that he was running. Like, they knew the whole team was about him. And he still did it. And the guy that just brought up about the Pittsburgh game, I remember that as a little kid, you know, how he ran and the high stepping and how fast he was and how well he cut. And this is nothing against Thurman, because I'll take Thurman over Emmitt Smith any day of the week and twice on Sunday. But O.J. Simpson is the best running back and the best offensive player we've ever had. And then Jim Kelly is number two. I hate who he became afterwards, you know. I mean, but I still remember the juice, you know, and I don't have a problem with him being on the wall right now. I think when we have a new stadium, they may take him off because of all his stuff, but he's fantastic. I mean, he just – and Donald, you said you haven't seen much of him. Go watch his games. Seriously, watch his games. He was amazing. I mean, he was up there with Jim Brown and Walter Payton and stuff like that. And I think he's one of the best of all-time running backs. That's my point.
All right. Hey, one more thing, Dan. You mentioned OJ's name coming off the wall. How do you do that? Yeah, I've wrestled with that over the years. I brought it up in Wall of Fame committee meetings, you know, years and years ago, 15 years ago. But – I don't know what the mechanism is for that. I don't know. What are you saying if you do that? I don't know.
I would think at that point, you would receive so much backlash if you took that name down rather than just leave it up there. I really believe that.
It'd be hard to say that. Why? People wouldn't defend him, but, I mean, people would craft an argument like, well, this is for on-field exploits only, right? Nobody would defend him or, you know, go to the wall to defend O.J. Simpson, right? I mean,
right.
I think it would be a difficult thing to say. I wonder if there needs to be an acknowledgement of off-field character not bringing disrepute to the franchise. May need to be in the criteria for a Wall of Fame, a Ring of Honor. The Pro Football Hall of Fame doesn't do anything about it. Maybe they should. And people get uncomfortable, like, well, then you're sitting in judgment of people's morality. No, not necessarily. I think we can all make a judgment as to whether, you know, somebody is bringing disrepute to a team or even the NFL. I think you make that judgment without, you know, sitting as in moral judgment of somebody, I believe. What do you think, Dan, in Florida?
You know, I personally think that you should be on the Wall of Fame. You should be in the Hall of Fame based on what you did on the field,
right,
and how you were in the locker room. That's why I have zero problems with T.O. not being in yet, meaning he can get in, you know, a year or two from now. Make him wait for a couple of years, you know. But, you know, he wasn't a problem, you know, like with drugs or hurting somebody or whatever. But what he was is he was a pain in the butt for like five teams that they all let him go. You know, that wasn't O.J.
Right.
You know, O.J., his problems came way after football. So,
which is why you shouldn't take
that. So, to me, he should remain in the Hall of Fame, and he should remain on the Wall of Fame. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Sounds like you agree with that, Donald?
I agree with that. I think, you know, he was not in trouble or anything while he was playing, and he didn't get into any trouble really for a long time after he was done playing. So, yeah, I think he's on the Wall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame for what he did while he was playing. And I don't think that you should take him out of the Hall of Fame and you shouldn't take him down from the Wall of Fame at this point. I don't think so.
Would you vote him in if
– I don't think I'd vote him in if if he gotten in trouble
before he was eligible for election,
I probably at that time wouldn't have voted, not for what he did. You know, I don't think I would vote him in at that point, but because it was a little bit, it was some time after, I think he should stay up there.
It's such a tough call, and damn it, I get so angry that O.J. Simpson has forced the franchise to wrestle with that.
Yeah.
I really do. Among all the things that he did, and he did heinous things and much worse than that, but he also forces the Bills and their fans, mostly the fans, to sort of grapple with what do we do with O.J.? I mean, is he, in fact, the number one offensive performer in team history? I think so. I think he is. But I understand if people say there's no way. There's no way I would ever bestow any honor on him. I get that. And it's just the fact that that's part of the O.J. package, too, bothers me a lot. It makes me mad, quite frankly.
It does, you know. And I'm going to tell you what really makes me mad, because we wrestle with O.J. and the things that, you know, he did on and then the things that he did off the field. But we also wrestle with T.O. and the things that he did in the locker room.
No comparison.
No comparison. But we still have this whole big debate and argument and why he should or shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. You know, and this guy never got in any trouble or anything, but he's still, people are like, he should never go into the Hall of Fame. It's like, what? What did the guy
do? Are a lot of people saying that? I don't know a lot of people saying that.
There are people
He's going to get in. He's waiting his turn.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely waiting his turn.
He wasn't a great teammate.
He wasn't a great teammate. But you have some people that are actually in the on the committee that vote that say he shouldn't get in the Hall of Fame.
Ever? Who says that? I can't think of any. He'll get in the Hall of Fame. He will get in the Hall of Fame.
How long should he have to?
I don't know. Whenever they're ready.
They're ready. Yeah, they'll be ready once he's dead and gone. Then they'll be like, T.O. should get in the Hall of Fame at this point.
Don calling from Alden. Go ahead, Don. Welcome. You're on the show.
Yeah, this is Dan.
I'm sorry, Dan. It is Dan. It's Dan on my screen. Sorry about that.
I'm Don. For the minority of people that vote other, I just wanted to give a special shout-out there to a person. You know, O.J., as great as he was, Thomas changed the game of football as a receiver from the backfield, but Pete Gogolak, how many times has he split those uprights on a kickoff? And now, you know, those were in the days of Lou the Toe Groza and straight on. Pete Gogolak changed the face of football. I know he's a special teamer, and it has nothing to do with your offensive player, but he did kind of change the face of football, didn't he?
You can make that argument if you'd like, Dan. You need to do a better job to convince me. How do you figure? I mean, and especially in Bill's history, what do you think?
Pardon?
Tell me why you would say that.
Well, there were no other soccer-style kickers at that time.
Yeah. So he changed the style of kicking,
Everyone is now.
Right. Don't you think they would have got to that eventually, or no?
No, everybody was straight on. I mean, even after that, you had Jack Dempsey from New Orleans with his club foot.
Tom Dempsey.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I wouldn't put Gogolak on my list of top 10 Bills anything, you know. I think he's an interesting figure in franchise history, but.
Right, I understand that, but he changed the face of football. Mm-hmm. And he was a Buffalo Bill, so I just wanted to throw that out
there.
Thank you for my opportunity.
Okay, thanks, Dan. I'm trying to think. He played 2 years with the Bills, too, 64, 65. It took me a while to look that up. I don't even know if that's long enough to, you know, to merit that kind of consideration. Here is John calling from Buffalo. John, second chance. How are you? He's not going to get a third chance either. Here is Cal calling from Grand Island. Hi, Cal. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
Good. I just, I don't know, I heard this conversation. I didn't really hear. Somebody when I thought was a great wide receiver when I was growing up was Bobby Chandler. I mean, you mentioned Ferguson and O.J., but after O.J. left and everything else in that little transition area, you know, with Coach Knox, I thought that Bobby Chandler deserved to be mentioned.
Yeah, I agree. I did mention him. I think Bobby Chandler deserves mention. I think Jerry Butler, maybe even ahead of Bob Chandler, deserves mention as a top 10 offensive performer. Eric Moulds makes the list as the seventh. Ranked on the Bills list of the you know, the Bills top 10, only two receivers, Andre and Eric Moulds. I would
Lofton going before.
Lofton deserves mention. He didn't play here a long time, but
right.
He's a Hall of Famer, Football Hall of Famer. Certainly he deserves a mention. Here's a call from Drew in Niagara Falls. Hello, Drew. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks.
I just wanted to say, my opinion on this list, I think it's pretty solid. My opinion, I grew up with in the 90s Bills, everything like that. So Thurman Thomas was probably one of the most complete players I've ever seen. Being able to catch the ball like he did out of the backfield and block also created a lot of that passing game, being able to have those abilities. And a second thing, I think Mould should be higher on this list just because of the fact of how many quarterbacks he had to play with. It was a constant revolving door where he didn't really have one steady quarterback for a good chunk of yards like Reed did and other wide receivers.
Right.
But he was still considered one of the top five players in his position while he was playing for a while.
Hmm. You guys had Eric Moulds on the show Friday, Donald.
Yeah.
What did he have to say for himself?
You know, he really wanted to put everything on everybody else. You know, he talked about – he even brought up Lee Evans as a guy, you know. And you know, he said he was proud of everything that he had accomplished when he was playing here, but he was really – trying to put everything on everybody else. I think he was a good receiver, and you know, like that guy's name was Drew, our caller just now.
Yeah.
Drew said he did have a couple of different quarterbacks, you know, and I don't think people understand how hard it is for a receiver or for a quarterback to gel in terms of timing, and he was able to do that with a couple of different quarterbacks, you know, and so I don't know if he should be higher on this list or not, but I do think he deserves to be on the list. So
Lee.
No, Eric Moulds.
Eric Moulds. Yeah, he's top 10. Yeah,
I think he deserves to be on. I don't know if he should be higher or lower, but I do think he deserves to be on this list. So.
All right, we're going to break. We've got fake news, real news coming up. Maybe more discussion on this. The top 10 offensive players in franchise history. Come on back. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with the show. Am I on, Mike? Back with the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And good, vigorous discussion today, Donald. And you know what? We'll probably do it again later this week, maybe next week, when the Bills Top 10 series gets to Top 10 defensive performers.
Ooh.
I don't want your thoughts yet, but I think it's much more clear-cut.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Defense is much more clear-cut. Who's number one? Offense is a little bit harder. Defense is going to be the argument and discussion will be behind number one, so two and back. But number one, I think everybody will probably see it the same way.
Here's a tweet. You can speak to this, Donald. Cynic Clinic tweets in, Lee Evans, in my opinion, was not a good receiver. He is a straight-ahead guy, afraid of the middle. Tasker was far and away better and would thrive with Brady. Tell me about good reaction. Jesus. tell me about your buddy Lee Evans. He was more than a straight ahead guy. Come on.
Wasn't well, first, he? how do we get to Tasker and thriving with Brady? I mean,
because we're crossing genres here, crossing.
Lee Evans was. I mean, Lee Evans was. He was a straight line guy, but Lee Evans was a pro at running routes. He knew how to run routes. He knew how to get open. He wasn't a guy who, you know, at least not while I was here, a guy who would catch it. You know, catch a slant, stop, go the other way, and take it for, you know, some crazy run or something like that. But he was a true receiver in terms of running routes, getting open, catching the ball. Comebacks, anything that you needed him to run in the pros, he knew how to run that. He wasn't the most exciting receiver. He wasn't a guy who would, like, jump over everybody, anything like that. But he was a solid receiver.
Solid. I mean,
he was a solid, good receiver. I think
he was good, right?
Yeah, he was a good receiver. I mean, you got a chance to watch a lot more of him than me. I only seen him the years that I was here with him, and the years that I was here with him. You would say he was more of a straight line guy, but Lee was just a pro at running routes and catching the ball. He wasn't, you know, I try to think of like an Antonio Brown, somebody who's like crazy exciting to watch. That wasn't Lee Evans. Even when he scored touchdowns, he wasn't going to dance or do any of that stuff, you know, so – I don't know. You compare him to Steve Tasker. That's, I don't know.
It's kind of a difficult comparison.
Yeah.
Time now for fake news, real news. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. A couple of interesting items today. One of them, Eric Berry, Chiefs defensive back. Should he be – the NFL is NFL Network, I should say, is in the process of unveiling their top 100. An argument made by KC Kingdom, a Kansas City fan site, that Eric Berry should be the number one player in the NFL's top 100. That's what they allege anyway.
The
that's what
one
they
player?
Think. Number one player in the league.
Mm.
I say fake. I don't think he's the guy. It would take me a minute or two, but I would eventually get to – 7 or 8 players, maybe better than Eric Berry.
Yeah,
maybe 10 or more. You know, what do you
first
think?
Of all, the safety position itself. I don't know if I could say any safety could be the number one player, and it's just the nature of the game. You know, It would have to be a quarterback probably, or a running back who's having a crazy season. Or maybe like a defensive end, a guy who can really wreak havoc on a game. At the safety position, you can make plays, but you know, there's kind of a lot of different things that have to go your way before you catch interceptions and different things like that. Eric Berry is a very good player, but I don't think he's the number one player in the league. I just can't give him that.
We both got that as fake. Fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy. How about this? Jarvis Landry, Dolphins wide receiver, the author of the hit on Aaron Williams.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to forgive him for that. Probably never.
You shouldn't, because he might have ended Aaron Williams' career.
Jarvis Landry with the Dolphins, 3 years, 288 catches, 13 touchdowns, obviously a major piece of what the Dolphins do on offense. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network says the belief around the league is that Landry is going to get a new contract and that he might become the highest paid wide receiver, depending on the timing. Mike Evans, Odell Beckham Jr., also going to get big money. Maybe if they fall that way, Odell Beckham, I don't know how they'd have to fall. Do those two have to go first for Jarvis Landry to be the highest paid receiver in the league? We're talking about upwards of 15 or 18 million a year.
I don't even.
Jarvis Landry will become the highest paid receiver in the NFL. Fake or real, Donald? What do you say?
I'm going to say.
I have a hard time with this.
Because it's going to come down to timing.
Those three are going to break the bank, those three. Timing.
They're definitely going to break the bank, and whoever goes last will be the highest paid, So I guess I have to go with real on this one. I just go real just because we don't know who's going to end up getting signed last, and we know that guys will always argue to be the highest paid, and he's going to break the bank. I mean, Jarvis Landry is going to break the bank, but in order for him to break the bank, they'll have to do something with Kenny Steele's contract because he just got paid this past season, right? So I think it's just going to come down to who goes last.
I do, too.
So I just went real on that one.
All right, and finally, fake or real, the Philadelphia Eagles have the best pass-rushing duo in the National Football League. Fake or real, do you have any thoughts on this one? I don't know if I would go along with that.
The best pass-rushing duo. No, I think I'm going to go fake on this one.
I am, too. I think the Texans, when Watt is
when Watt is healthy, I think
Merciless is really good.
They would have to be up there. I even like Oakland with Khalil Mack and Bruce Irving on the other side.
I got this fake, too.
Yeah, I'm going to go fake on this one. I don't even think, to be honest with you, their pass rushing duo is better than the Bills with Jerry Hughes, if he's at the top of his game, and Shaq, the way he played last year coming into his second year. I think they can be better than the Eagles. Pass rushing duo.
Chargers, Melvin Ingram with a new contract and Joey Bosa, they would merit some consideration. They do. I think the Texans with Clowney and J.J. Watt and the aforementioned Whitley Merciless.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think the Eagles can say that.
Yeah, so fake.
That's fake. Fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. We're going to be back to talk a little bit more about the issues of the day and take your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? It is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned from today's show? We had a couple of good guests, including Steve Tasker, Steve Tasker joined us in studio for an hour. We ran it by him, the top 10 offensive players in Bills history. It was number one on the Bills list, released on the television show last night. We're going to look at our Twitter poll in a minute, but here's what Steve Tasker said about Kelly at the top of the top 10 offensive players list.
Jim's, he played the most important position, and he was the driving force behind that team that went to the Super Bowl four straight times. But Thurman is truly a great player. I mean, Jim was talented and he was a great leader. He had a lot of intangibles that went along with his talent. Big arm, and he had all of that stuff. Thurman was truly great. I mean, he was great. I mean, he wasn't just a great runner. He was a great running back, great football player. He could run the ball, catch the ball, run routes, pick up blitzes. He was good split out wide in the offense. He was good in the backfield. You could move him around. You could do anything, virtually anything with a football.
Steve Tasker makes the case for Thurman Thomas as the top offensive player in Buffalo Bills history. More on that in a moment. Also today, we had Bills first-round draft pick Tre'Davious White in studio with us at 1:30 today. He's getting set to scoot out of here on Thursday when the rookie development program ends. White and the rest of the rookies have been here for the week so far. Tre'Davious White talked about the work he still needs to do on the playbook and how that's gone so far for him.
I'm 100% in it. I know what I'm doing, and I'm comfortable in the techniques that, you know, Coach Bird is teaching me. So I feel like I got off to a great start, you know, with the OTAs and the rookie minicamp and the mandatory minicamp. So I have a lot of work to do, though, but I'm going to go back to Louisiana and continue to work and come back in camp in great shape and ready to roll.
No doubt he will be ready to roll. Tre'Davious White, who a couple of times now he's been on the show, even listening to him talk after some of the minicamp practices, he has a knack for making a good impression,
which is a good thing to have,
I think.
You know, he's impressive when talking to the media. Same with Zay. You know, like, these guys know how to handle the media. For rookies coming in, they are in the spotlight because they will be expected to play. The one thing that we've seen, not only can they handle the media, it seems like they are fitting in on the field as well. You know, these guys look like they will play huge roles in this team this year.
Three starters. I mean, if you lined up three tomorrow starters. And started a game
from
tomorrow.
What it sounds like, three starters right now. And one of those linebackers, Viejo, might be a guy who rotates in there as well at the linebacker position.
Hey, our Twitter poll today was interesting and a good, healthy debate and dialogue all day long. It deals with the Bills Top 10 show, which came up yesterday. More on that in a moment. But the top 10 offensive players in franchise history revealed yesterday on the show. Who's your choice for number one? Well, at the end of our Twitter poll, 44% of you agreed with the TV show and said Jim Kelly is the top offensive player in franchise history. 27% said O.J. Simpson. 25% right behind said Thurman Thomas. 4% said somebody else. We had the top 10 list that included Kelly and Thurman and O.J., also Andre Reed, Joe DeLaMalleur, Billy Shaw, Eric Moulds, Cookie Gilchrist, Jack Kemp, Ken Hull. We talked about some others, including Joe Ferguson. Joe Cribb's name came up. Bob Chandler's name came up. Reuben Brown's name came up. So it's definitely worth debate. I think everybody pretty much locks on the top three there, Donald, with Kelly, Thurman, and O.J. I would have O.J. my number one, strictly based on his on-field performance. I think you agree, right?
Yeah, I would have O.J. as number one. But we also talked about, and we had a lot of people weigh in on this, should linemen be on this list?
Linemen, yeah. People brought that up. But, of course, linemen are real.
Linemen are real.
Steve had you know, Steve's take was, I think he said, and you heard the soundbite a minute ago, Thurman Thomas would have been his choice.
Yeah.
But Steve also, you know, and not denigrating anybody, but he talked about Joe D, Billy Shaw, guards, who in Steve Tasker's world don't have as much impact as some of the other top offensive performers on the list. So that was interesting, I thought.
That was interesting. I mean, the guards here now have a huge impact on this line because they have to do so much. Well, at least last year's offense they did. We'll see what they have to do this year in terms of pulling and stuff like that. But, you know, Steve talked about the left tackle, right tackle, and the center position as being the most important parts of the offensive line. And the guards are, you know, they kind of hide guards because they're not as strong as the the tackles in the center. So
they hide them.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in this topic, and I assume you would be if you're tuned into our show, today at 4:30, the TV show will be repeated on TV on MSG. Also, again, tonight at 11:30, you can fire up your DVR and check local listings for all the re-airs on MSG. There will be quite a few. But the top 10 offensive players in Bills history, TV show premiered last night, repeated today at 4:30, again at 11:30, and check the local listing for MSG to see when that will air again. As we said, later this week we'll get into the top 10 defensive performers in franchise history, a list that no doubt will include Bruce Smith, Cornelius Bennett, Daryl Talley, Tom Sestak, Fred Smirlis. Yeah, there's going to be enough.
The debate will be two and back, you know, two to ten.
Yeah,
number one,
right.
I think we are all going to say who number one is, but the debate is going to be who is 2 through 10. Should so-and-so be number 2? Should so-and-so be number 5? I think that's going to be the real debate.
I agree with you. That's a debate for another day, and we'll get to that debate in a couple of days. I got one more thing for you, Donald. I came across this. This is going to U.S. District Court in Chicago. A Green Bay Packers fan is suing the Chicago Bears because he said they violated his free speech by preventing him from wearing Packers gear apparel at Bears pregame warmups. You know how they allow fans on the field pregame? This guy got on the field through the Bears, wore his Packers gear. The Packers actually sent him an email and said, don't do it, and they prevented him from getting on the field. No opposing team gear will be allowed. It's a federal court case now in Chicago, which is pretty amazing. Wow. But I understand why teams do that. I've had opportunities to help people get tickets or maybe even get on the field, you know, for the pregame, and I tell them, don't go down there wearing the opponent's gear.
I remember I brought up some family members to a Bills and Jets game. We played the Jets. This is when I was playing. And they came with all of this jet stuff and went up in the box and everything. I'm like, dude, you can't do that.
You can't do that. It's a federal case now in Chicago. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Derek Kramer is our intercom board op. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, our producer, Jay Harris. Help from Ryan Dukarm and Jess Pappas. We're back tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.